Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Ariel Helwani's MMA Show!
Back in your life on this Monday, January 21st, 2019. Hello again, everyone. I'm Ariel Helwani. Welcome back to the program. Welcome to our Bristol, Connecticut studios. And let me tell you, it is freezing outside and there's a lot of snow here too. Wow. It's like a winter wonderland out there. So I'm very excited and very happy and very thankful to be inside warm with all of you. If it's snowing where you are, or if there's a lot of snow and you don't want to go outside, if you're off today because it's Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. Day, then please do spend some time with all of us because, my friends, we have a lot to discuss on this Monday afternoon here in Bristol, Connecticut. The new era has begun. It commenced in Brooklyn, New York on Saturday night. We are going to be talking about that card all show long. And let me just tell you, as my computer makes this noise here, let me just tell you that the crowd in Brooklyn, if I were giving out performances of the night bonuses, if I was giving out MVP awards, the crowd in Brooklyn wins my award. They were phenomenal. If you were in attendance on Saturday night, you deserve some kind of bonus, because you were incredible. They were on fire. Cerrone Hernandez fight, main event, just an amazing crowd. I did not expect that from this crowd. You know, not a lot of local favorites, if you will, on the main card, not a lot of, you know, huge names on the card, so to speak, but they were on their feet. They were loud. They were there from the beginning, so big props to you. Now, we are coming off the debut card, UFC on ESPN. You have seen the numbers out there. You have seen what kind of a success it was. I don't need to talk about all that. That's a little, you know, inside baseball, if you will. And quite frankly, you know, we need to be humble around here. But here's one thing I do want to acknowledge right off the top. I want to acknowledge this. Last week, our little train that could was seen on multiple platforms and on the best platforms possible. Regular Monday show from our new studio. You saw that on YouTube, on Twitter. That was very exciting, right? live.twitter.com/ESPN. And of course, our new YouTube page, youtube.com/ESPN MMA. You're seeing all the Twitter, Instagram accounts right over there. So that was huge. But then we had our TV debut on Tuesday, late Tuesday night, midnight Eastern time, 9 p.m. Pacific, on ESPN News. It's going to be on ESPN News for one more week this week, the condensed version, the highlight one-hour version, if you will. And then next week, we move to our permanent home, ESPN2. And the reason for that is Australian Open. Some tennis tournament is going on, and apparently it's a little more important than us. So that's number two. That's a nice little bucket list item that we checked off. But then Saturday, we were on ESPN Radio. ESPN Radio National 1 hour. So in 1 week, we were on digital, TV, and radio. That's gigantic. That's a huge honor for me, and I want to thank everyone who made that happen, and hopefully that is the norm. So I've called it the little train that could. I still feel it is such, but now we have a lot of muscle behind us, a lot of support behind us, and this is very exciting. So I wanted to acknowledge that. I wanted to say that because it's just such an exciting time for the program. And it's a great time to be here at ESPN covering mixed martial arts in particular, because there is so much excitement about the sport. There is so much interest in the sport. Brooklyn came and went. By now, you probably know Henry Cejudo is still the UFC flyweight champion. He defeated TJ Dillashaw in 32 seconds. Controversial main event. You can use that word. I think that word is a little aggressive, but it is a main event, and it's a stoppage in particular that has been debated. And the thing about it is, to me, there is no controversy. The thing about it is, it was a good call. Kevin McDonald is not some local referee. Kevin McDonald is not some guy that, you know, got the opportunity to ref a main event in Brooklyn on a massive card because he happens to be a New York referee. I've talked about this before. Just because the UFC is in Oklahoma City doesn't mean that, you know, the local Oklahoma City ref gets a shot at the big time. First of all, Kevin McDonald is from Massachusetts. Second of all, he's been reffing major MMA events for the last 15 years. And in fact, he's a former fighter as well. So he deserved to be there. And I thought he made the right call. You're looking at the highlights here. Yeah, we talked about the push. That's not what led to the demise. You're seeing the demise right over here. Look at the head go back. I thought it was a good call. The referees have the toughest job in sports, MMA referees in particular. You have to jump in there at a split second's notice. You can't think about what the stakes are. You can't think about main event. You can't think about TJ Dillashaw just cut weight for 12 weeks. No, that's not how it works. You have to look at what you are seeing in the middle of the cage. And in the middle of the cage, on Saturday night, that was a proper stoppage. Have there been cleaner ones? Yeah, of course. But that was a proper stoppage, in my opinion. And I thought that the right call was made. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking to the two particulars involved in that main event in a matter of moments. Greg Hardy, of course, made his long-awaited, much-discussed UFC debut on Saturday. He fought Alan Crowder, and he lost that fight via DQ. It was not a clean fight. It was not a very exciting fight. It was a very sloppy fight. And I maintain everything that I said leading up to this fight was proven to be true. He did not deserve to be in the co-main event. He was not UFC caliber. I had no problem with him being in the UFC. Just didn't think he should be on this card. And certainly not in that spot. And I didn't think he should be on that card because of how big of a card it was, how historic it was. First ever card in the UFC on ESPN era. But I also didn't like the fact that he was on the same card as Rachel Ostovich. And I know all of you said, okay, enough of that already, but that was my stance, and I'm going to ride that out until the end. But the fight came and went, and there were some moments, and you're seeing some of his moments right over here, but in the end, cardio issues and just overall skill issues. He's not quite there. 3-0 is a professional. And so I feel like they're doing him a disservice by pushing him so quickly, putting him in there against a guy who has 12 fights on his record. Not to say that Alan Crowder blew right by him, but there's the controversial finish. I don't believe he did it on purpose. I don't believe he tried to end the fight that way. I just think maybe he was tired. Maybe he just didn't know where he was. Maybe he didn't know the rule. In the end, Crowder wins, has to be helped out and, you know, out of the cage. And Greg Hardy now has a loss on his record. I think he'll be back. Dana White seems to be very eager to have him back. This appears to be a hill that he wants to die on. And it's a strange one to me because of who he is. But in the end, hey, you want to be in the Greg Hardy business? Great. You're going to have to deal with moments like that. So we'll talk about Greg Hardy throughout the show. We'll talk about Paige VanZant's, return and her victory. We'll talk about the new era. We'll talk about all that and then some. Let me run down today's lineup, and then we'll get to our first guest of the day, who I do believe is standing by, and I do believe he has a little a friend with him, so to speak. Okay, so at around 3:40, we're going to be joined by TJ Dillashaw. We'll get his thoughts on how this all went down on Saturday night, and whether he wants to really go after the rematch. And we'll see how he feels less than 48 hours removed from the fight. Dennis Bermudez, who retired on Saturday night in the middle of the cage, we'll talk to him about why he's walking away off a win. We'll talk to Marlon Moraes, who's headlining the next big UFC show in 2 weeks in Fortaleza against Rafael Sunsau. You suspect that he will be next in line if he wins. That's what should happen, at least. Joanne Calderwood will join us at 2:40 to talk about her big win on Saturday against Ariane Lipski. And yes, our haircut proved to be a good luck charm for her. So thank you very much, and you're welcome to all the Joanne Calderwood fans out there. And now she wants either a title shot or a big fight next, so we'll see what happens next. Stephen Thompson is going to return on March 23rd against Anthony Showtime Pettis. We'll talk to him about that fight. That's in Nashville. And then we'll talk to Anthony Pettis at 205 to talk about why he's moving up to 170 pounds. So I'm looking forward to hearing from him. Corey Sandhagen had a massive win, the very first on ESPN television against Mario Bautista, so we'll talk to him at 150. Paige VanZant will stop by at 135, talk about the aforementioned win over one Rachel Ostovich. But first, let us not waste any more time. Do we have our first guest ready to go? The man of the hour, too sweet to be sour, the reigning defending UFC flyweight champion, the man who saved the 125-pound division on Saturday night by finishing TJ Dillashaw as he said he would. In just 32 seconds, there he is. El Campeón himself, the 2008 Olympic gold medalist, Henry, the messenger, Cejudo, in the house. Henry, how are you?
There you go. It feels good, man. It feels good for you to be the first interview I'm doing after the whole aftermath. And I just want to say thank you, Ariel. Thank you for, I knew you believed in me. I knew you believed in the storyline. I knew you believed in the flyweights. It just means a lot to me, Ariel, that everything that you've done for the sport, but in particular what you did for all those little guys, man. I want to say thank you.
Oh, I appreciate that. That means a lot to me. And I'm happy that you said that because, Henry, I wasn't able to attend the press conference, but everyone was telling me afterwards that you actually gave me a little shout out. Do we have that clip? I just want the world to know that the champion, the first thing that was on his mind after winning this massive fight was little old me, the nose. Let's play that clip.
Where's Ariel Helwani? Where's he at? Where's Mr. Nose? I wanted some questions from him.
Yes, Henry, I love you. Great shout out. I appreciate that very much. Okay, so let's talk about what transpired on Saturday night. Have you watched the fight? I mean, it's only 32 seconds. I'm assuming you've watched it ad nauseum, but A, have you watched it? And B, what do you think of the stoppage now 2 days later?
Oh, it was the right stoppage, guys. I mean, he was going to take an extra 10 hits. I mean, if the ref wasn't to stop it, I could feel it. That's the real reason why I started attacking him hard, because I could feel his body go limp a couple of times from that. I think it's, and I said in the beginning, I believe it was that head kick. I touched his face. It wasn't as hard, but it was kind of precise. And I saw him I saw his demeanor change. And that's when I threw that overhand, a little loopy overhand. That's the one that kind of caught him and really rattled him. And as he was getting up, I wasn't trying to wrestle him. Like I didn't. I wanted TJ on my leg, Dutch. You know, I wanted him to be able to feel what it's like to defend against somebody good, because, you know, great defense will take you out. So I just decided to get this and just start whacking. Like, I never did anything I never got into his guard because I knew he was hurt. I gave him space and I dropped him twice. You can only buckle somebody so many times before it's too late, man. I think it was a great stoppage. If I was that ref, I know he's getting a lot of heat from a lot of people, but I wouldn't dwell on it. You know, this is MMA. It's sanctioned. There's sports, and I thought it was the right stoppage area.
And I agree with you on that. You came out very aggressively. Was that part of the game plan, Henry? Did you want to come at him quickly, and did you think that there would be an opening that soon to finish the fight that quickly?
Yeah, because I figured a lot of people that have fought TJ, nobody's ever pressed him. He's always kind of dictated the pace, you know. And the cool thing about it, Ariel, is I can fight with pressure and I can fight with this. I do both. And sometimes, you know, sometimes you go out there when you fight, you just react. And you play your cards right. And it's fighting's like a card game. You know, your opponent's expressions, his face will tell all. And I think that's exactly what happened when I caught him with that first body kick. I knew I hurt him with that first body kick, too. It was a body kick right hand. And I think I surprised him. And I slowly started seeing him go backwards. And I was just, I don't want to tell you the whole game plan, but no, that's all she wrote. I thought it was a great stoppage. You know, it's like, Ariel, I've been extremely, extremely blessed, man. I beat, you know, Demetrius Johnson and now TJ Dillashaw. I mean, that puts me amongst the elites, man. Like Henry Cejudo's no slouch.
Yes, yes.
He's no pushover.
Say it loud and say it proud. Oh, there's that. Do you have a cameraman filming this? What's going on here, Henry? That was amazing.
Dude, who did that? You know who the cameraman is. Go ahead,
Captain. Captain Eric? There he is, Captain Eric. Better. So proud.
Captain A.
Well, look at this. Oh, now you're his cameraman.
See, that's how it works, man. This dude is... we're still debating on Coach of the Year.
Well, it's 2019. It's 2019. You know, it's a new year now.
He's still bitter. He wants that damn title now. This dude does not stop. That's the first thing that came to his mind. I said, now I'm in the lead for the coach in 2019. Ariel Helwani, you better step it up.
All right. I told him. He's on his way. It's been a great start to the year for you guys. I know that doesn't mean much to him, but... You're on your way. Now, let me ask you this. Were you watching the co-main event, Henry? Because it seemed like at one point you were about to knee him while he was down, and then you were like, whoop, I can't do this now, he's down. Did that ever cross your mind? Were you about to knee him for a quick second there?
Yeah, I was telling the corners that I had thought about it, but I didn't even see the co-main event. Because I knew it was going to end quick, or something was going to happen. You know, with big guys, you just never know.
Yeah.
And what I ended up doing is... I like close my eyes right before I go up and I warm up and I go fight. So I close my eyes and I put my headphones on. And by the time I got up, it was like an illegal knee. So I didn't even know how it happened. But I think those are just natural instincts, man. It's like, you think about a real, real fight, it kind of came into perspective, like, how 1FC is. Like, man, a knee to a face when these guys are slowly starting to get up, man, that changes the whole game, you know?
Thank God you didn't do it.
But, yeah, but I was getting, and I was telling Captain, I was like, I was getting ready to throw it. I was getting ready to throw that knee, dude. And luckily, my instincts, I was able to still relax and focus up here. And we didn't do that.
You were very happy afterwards. Obviously, this was a great moment for you. TJ has received some heat. I mean, I just see on my Twitter, people are like, oh, is he going to come on the show and cry about this, this and that? Do you feel like anything he has said afterwards has tried, you know, has been an attempt on his part to take away your victory, to dampen the celebration that you're enjoying right now?
I get it, though. I understand his position. He's a winner. And I said it before, I think that's what makes TJ special, is the fact that being a sore loser is not a bad thing. He's a very passionate human being. So, I mean, I'm a sore loser too, you know, That's just part of being a competitor. But, at the end of the day, I'm a very carefree person there. People can say anything about me. He can say anything. He can try to take anything from the victory. But man, at the end of the day, let me show you. Let me show you, Ariel.
Please. I want to ask you about that thing. You're the first champion to hold it. So what do you think? Because it's received a lot of hate. A lot of people are very critical of the new belt. What do you think of it? You're the first champion to actually hold that thing. What is that? Star Trek? It looks like a Star Trek belt? You don't like it?
No, I like it, actually. It's very beautiful. It's a lot nicer in person. You know, but I did get on the USC. I said, the USC got smart, man. I said, instead of you guys just giving us a new belt every time we win, you guys are now just giving us a damn ruby. I said, you guys got to step it up, man.
Cost-cutting measure.
What's up with all these budget cuts? I want a new belt every time, Ariel.
I know.
And plus, Ariel, I'm still waiting for my nose award.
It's coming. It's right here. It's on my desk. Everyone's giving me crap for that. Corporate Jake, you got to get on that.
That's going in the Hall of Fame.
That's right. That's going right next to the gold medal. So you like...
And make sure to put a little bit of brown in that milk.
Oh, man. Jeez. I'll take it. No problem. Is it lighter?
We're still complaining with DC.
All right. Fine. I'm going to hear this for the rest of the year. I might as well just give you guys the award now so I don't have to hear it. But hey, is it lighter? How does it feel? It looks smaller.
No, it's actually a lot heavier than the old belt.
Okay, all right.
It's really nicer. I think it looks a lot nicer in person.
In person, okay.
Yeah, it's one of those things. I mean, it's something new, man. I think once more and more people start to have it, it's going to become like a little trend, because I already like it better than the old belt, actually.
Oh, okay. Well, there you have it. Dana White put the belt around you, and then what happened? Did he leave? Because you were calling, you were saying, Uncle Dana, where are you at? Was he mad or something?
Uncle Dana was hiding. No more hiding, Uncle Dana. No more hiding. I told you. I said, I'm going to knock this guy out. And I said it on first take. I says, you lose that weight, I'm focused, I'm ready, there's a bigger purpose to this. I says, I'm gonna take your boy out, Dana. And that's what happened. I mean, I wasn't this fight wasn't catered for me to win. No, this wasn't. We asked. You know, I said, you know what? Bring him down. And it's unfortunate that people would take a little bit out of the victory, or people would complain about it. But people, man, guys, I was going to kill him. I was going to hurt him. You know, number one, it's like every time before I go fight, Ariel, I always pray to God, and I always talk about not just my safety, but the safety of my opponent. Like, I really, every time, I don't just worry about me. I'm like, you know, my opponent has a family. My opponent has you know, something to live for. And I always pray, like, man, take care of us. Not just me, but us. And, you know, it's unfortunate that people think it's an early stoppage. Man, I think it's, I was weighing in at 146. I mean, wow. I was big, strong, jacked. You know, these hands are not brittle, man. These hands have been made for combat.
Do you think Dana White's upset that you won?
No, I don't think so. I think now he knows there's a new star that's born. There's a new sheriff in town, and you know, that's just the way it is, Ariel.
So, did you talk to him backstage?
No, I didn't even get a chance to see him.
Whoa.
He took off. He took off on Ariel.
What? He ran out of town. Weren't we supposed to get an update? He said on Saturday we'll find out about the future of the division.
He said that. But, you know, Uncle Dana says a lot, man. So
that's right.
I'm gonna have a meeting with him, Ariel, on Thursday. We're gonna talk about the future of the division and find out exactly what's going on, and what's the next step, you know? Because it's, you know, they got rid of a lot of the people in my weight class, man. It's almost like. It's unfortunate. Like I'm almost like my back's against the wall. I feel like you know, I've been stressing it. I've been doing it. I mean, I beat two of the greatest of all time. I mean, Demetrius, now TJ. I mean, that resume speaks for itself, Ariel. You know.
Yeah. So what do you think? What's your gut say right now? The fact that he didn't want to talk about it before, the fact that he didn't want to talk about it on Saturday, the fact that he didn't talk to you backstage on Saturday. Do you feel like it's inevitable? Like he already made up his mind? He's going to close this down?
I think it's been saved.
You think you saved it?
I believe I saved it. And I think, and this is the reason why, Ariel, that, and I said it before, Ariel, so I don't want you guys to feel like I'm taking things back, because you heard me at the press conference, and you heard me when we talked about, when you interviewed me right before, you know, this fight got announced. I says, I'm going to beat this man at 125 pounds. And now I want my shot at double gold at 135. Yes, I saved the flyweight, Ariel, and I'm gonna be at flyweight. But I told you guys since the beginning that I want my shot at 135 pounds, and I continue to keep adding to the legacy. I know you're saying, "Oh, it's the move to flyweight." Well, you know, he saved it, but I'm telling you since the beginning, this is the plan, Ariel.
That is true.
And, I want my crack at second gold, man. It's about my legacy now, man. No, I believe I'm probably one of the greatest combat athletes of all time, and I want to secure with this victory at 135 pounds.
Okay, so that is accurate, and that is consistent. You have been saying that, but people like my partner Chael and others are saying, well, now it's contradictory, because you're saying you want to save the flyweights, you want to be a flyweight, but then your next fight, you want to move up to 135. So it doesn't feel like you're doing this for the flyweights. It feels like you're just kind of doing it for yourself. What do you say to those people who are like, okay, you're talking about saving the flyweights, but now you're talking about your next fight is at bantamweight?
No, it's legacy. That's all there is to it. I think if anybody was in my position, but the only reason why I would do this is making sure that the 125-pound belt is secured for all of us, not just for me, but for all of us. Hmm. And again, Ariel, I got to sit down and really talk to Dana, because I don't know what's going on. You know, I can promise you guys that I'll go to, you know, oh, we can do it again at 125. Like, I don't have a problem with that. TJ, if you want your rematch, you got it, man. You lost your juice, man. You lost your juice. You lost to me. I'm your next fight, man. I think everybody knows that. That they're not going to give you, it's, you lost your juice, man. Unless you revenge your loss to me, your stock market went down.
Do you feel like he was a different fighter at 125 because of that extra, you know, 10 pounds that he cut?
His rhythm, everything was good, Ariel. I don't know, Ariel. I really don't know. I mean, it was a quick fight. I can tell you something. I have never been in better, and I said at the press conference, Ariel, I have never been in this is the best shape of my life.
Yeah.
Not even for the Olympics, Ariel, have I felt this strong. The people at Neuroforce One, my science team, man, they're doing an incredible job, man, an incredible job. And I'm making weight easy, not easy, but I'm making weight. I'm recovering like a maniac. I'm going out and I feel strong. I feel like I feel overwhelmed. I felt overpowering against my fight with TJ. I just felt good, man. And it's because of the people that I have around me at Neuroforce One, you know. And I want to thank my coach, Captain Eric Albarrison, who put the right team together. Flying guys out from Holland, from Brazil, from Mexico. I mean, guys, I train like a professional. I am a professional. Like, literally, if you guys were to see my camp and see exactly everything that we do, everything that I do, Ariel, has a purpose. Technical-wise, scientific-wise, like, we're doing everything by the books of the human anatomy.
And you need to get paid like a professional too now, right?
Yes, absolutely, Ariel.
Because you don't feel like you have been paid accordingly.
I'm here to, man. I'm the cash cow, man. It's the Cejudo wave. You know, everybody wants a piece of me now. Everybody's coming out of the woodworks. I got a huge target on my back, but you know what? I'm going to embrace that. You know, everybody's on those, both flyweights and bantamweights. We don't know what the history of the flyweights is going to it's gonna hold for us, but I can tell you one thing, man. I'm going to continue to fight. I'm going to continue to fight and have my meeting with Uncle Dana, and then we're going to take it from there, Ariel.
By the way, at that meeting, walk in with that press release, the numbers on Saturday. You see those numbers? 500,000+ subscriptions added to ESPN Plus in one day. Highest rated prelims on cable in 5 years, 6 years. I mean, you got to bring that. People want to see you fight. It's all because of you, Henry.
Yeah, that was my next question for you, Mr. Nose.
Yes.
Who would you credit? I would credit that to both me and you.
I think we did a great job, Henry. If I'm being honest, I think we did a phenomenal job. But if I'm being honest, I think you and I sold this card better than anyone on the planet. Better than anyone. The people who got paid to sell it didn't sell it as good as you and I. Most important fight in UFC history. I said it. Trademark it.
Yeah, I like that, man. I came out with the snake. I mean, I did it because I knew this was huge. This was huge for, you know, drawing attention to the flyweights, man. I knew, I mean, I got people in the city. I'm just randomly walking, and I got people over here just recognizing me.
Wow.
Like, New York City's not even, they're not huge MMA guys.
People. No.
They're not. And because I come here quite frequently, quite a bit, and nobody like, oh, that's the UFC champ. Oh, okay. But now after this fight at the Barclays Center, it's like, man, the people, everybody from the guy holding the door to the person serving me at the bar. I mean, it's crazy. It's overwhelming.
Just a couple more minutes left with the reigning defending UFC flyweight champion, the man who saved the 125-pound division, the great Henry Cejudo. Thank you so much for doing this, Henry. Henry, I have to say, there's one thing that you didn't mention that I think was a big factor in your victory on Saturday, an overlooked factor, the beard, Henry. The power of the beard is a very powerful thing. You got to keep that thing. Please do not. You are a different man. I saw the pictures of you when you fought DJ. You look completely different. You are a man with that beard. You are intimidating. Okay? Please don't let go of that thing, okay? Keep it. You
going to
keep it?
Yeah, no, I'm going to. Actually, you're the one that actually convinced me. I'm going to tell you right now on a worldwide live stream.
But we're also on ESPN News, Henry, okay? So don't forget, we're on TV, all right? We're multifaceted here.
Okay, I'm sorry. You're in Connecticut now, too. Like,
yes.
I was trying to do an in-studio interview, but when you sent me that text message, because I was really thinking about just cutting the whole thing off, and I put it on my story, and you said, you got to keep it.
Yes.
You're actually the reason why I actually kept it.
Wow. What an honor. I didn't know I had that much power.
You do, Eric. You do, man. I listen, man.
I thought it was the Bella twins. Can you tell me this story? You and the Bella twins cozying up on the plane? What happened there?
Nothing. I hope something went on.
Do you know them, or you just bumped into them?
No, they're from Arizona. I bumped into them when I was sitting first class, and they were right next to me. And, you know, I started... Nikki Bella has been like my biggest crush. Yeah,
really?
I can tell you, like, she's been like my biggest crush. So she was sitting next to me. I was like, how am I going to approach this? And then, I thought, I was like, hold on, like my little niece. She's 9 years old, and she loves the Bella twins. And she was her for Halloween, Nikki Bella, and she was Nikki Bella for her birthday. She had like a whole birthday theme.
Wow.
So then I approached the dude, like, dude, my niece, this is my niece. I just, you know, can you give her a shout out for the world being the world to me? And yeah, super nice. You know, I use my niece to talk to her.
Well done. Well, I saw that. Well done. And then they're writing on your Instagram. Did you see them give you a, I don't know who's writing, because it's just one account for two people, which is a little strange. But did you see them give you a shout out?
Yeah, they did.
Look at you.
Yeah, they're following me now. And,
Now is Nikki Bella the one that's married to Daniel Bryan, or is she the single one?
No, she's the single one.
Whoa, Henry.
I'm talking about the single one.
Henry. What? Henry, get out the way, John Cena. Here comes the messenger, Henry Cejudo, the champ. Ooh, we got to make this happen, Henry.
Tiger.
I will tag her. I'll put this clip out, Henry. I'm going to let the world know that you are ready, willing, and available.
Zach's single, trilingual, and ready
to mingle. Oh, I love it. It's so great. Henry, this is amazing stuff. So next up, you're staying in New York for a day or so, and then you're going to Las Vegas to meet with Dana, and then you're going to campaign for what? What are we campaigning for? To save the flyweights or for your title shot at 135? What is the mission here? And to get paid. You got a lot on the docket.
Yeah, I do. I do. Well, like I said, with the UFC, you just don't know. Like we don't have a union. We only have a certain amount of say. But I think this goal is going to carry a lot of juice, man. So it's going to be both, Ariel. I want my shot at 135 pounds, and I want to save the flyweight division. It's both, man. That's just the way it is, Ariel.
What if they say you can only have one? What if they say you can only have one pick?
Damn, Ariel, why do you do this to me?
What if they say that?
I'm gonna give you the Dana White one. We'll wait till Thursday.
No, come on. Pick one. What's more important to you, to save your division or to go
we're
up?
We're saving the flyweight division.
Yes, Henry. Yes.
Dana White, stop hiding.
Yes. Why is he hiding? Why is he hating? Not answering your questions. You put him on the spot on Thursday. You made a bet with him and he wouldn't take it. And he's the biggest gambler there is.
Damn! I don't need that. It's scary, man. I think now he believes in Henry.
Yeah, so it's he needed to see it.
Yeah, he has to, man. He has to. There's music in his ear right now. There's I can tell he's gonna change when we meet. I promise.
Did you hear from DJ? Did he send anything to you?
No, I have not. I'm curious to. I'm curious to even hear from him.
I spoke to him beforehand, and he said he was rooting for you. Yeah, I said, what do you think of all this stuff going on? This was your weight class. You put it on the map. He said, I'm rooting for Henry. I hope they save the division. I hope he wins.
Oh, wow. That's awesome, man. DJ, he's a hell of a fighter, but I still think he's the greatest of all time. You know, and that means a lot, man. It's unfortunate that he's no longer in the UFC, but believe it or not, Ariel, I'm actually going to miss him.
Yeah,
I'm gonna miss seeing him in the UFC, seeing him perform. Like it's poetry. It's poetry in motion, man. It's, you know, that's awesome.
You've been very clear what you want, but I'm just curious. Did you see Benavidez's fight? And is there any interest if you don't get what you want, the 135 pound title fight, in fighting him again?
Yeah. Joe's definitely on the menu. For sure, if that TJ fight don't go down, that's the next guy.
Okay, Henry, congratulations! What a moment, man! You deserve it. You are turning in truly. I know your manager says it all the time, Ali, but you're turning into one of the greatest combat sportsmen of all time. Olympic gold medal, now doing what you're doing in the UFC. This is unprecedented stuff, and you deserve it. And I was so happy that you were put on display. And not only that, you stepped up to the plate, man. Like, you promoted it. You did all the interviews. You were entertaining. You were charismatic. You come out with the jacket, with the gold medal at the press conference. It's just fun, man. I don't know. Honestly, Captain Air, I don't know who deserves the credit for bringing this out, because you weren't like this when you came to the UFC.
I'm gonna tell you the people that have made an impact.
Okay.
It has been, number one, it has been Captain America, Captain Eric Alberson, the 2019 Coach of the Year.
Yes.
Let me get that straight.
Yes.
So let's rub some of that brown out that nose.
Yes.
Yes. Ariel. Number two, I'd probably say Ariel Helwani.
What?
I believe you've helped push that. You've always encouraged me to be myself.
Yeah.
Remember that one time I came out with that Aztec toss? Dana White didn't like it. You're like, dude, I loved it. I heard it from him, like, oh, cool, man. He gets me when I came out with the Aztec warrior costume.
I love it.
I'd say number three, which probably is number one, is probably Chael Sonnen.
Wow.
Sonnen, all of his, he pushed me. He says, you know what? Don't be like Henry Cejudo. Don't be that honorable guy. Get in people's faces. You know, be tough. I'll take it from that. And then number four, probably Ali.
Well, what mentors?
But all you guys could go. All you guys could be one. All you guys could be. That's crazy. But so it'd be Eric, Ariel, Chael, Ali. All you guys played a big role in this, and this is the reason why we're breaking records, man. You know?
Well, for me, number one is you. Congratulations. You did it. You called your shot. I hope you get what you want on Thursday. Keep us posted on how that goes, Henry. Thanks for doing this.
Okay. We'll do, Ariel. You guys, thank you, Ariel.
You're the man. Take care. There he is. The reigning, defending UFC flyweight champion, the man who saved the flyweights on Saturday night in Brooklyn, New York, the great Henry Cejudo. What a story. 32 seconds. Now he heads to Las Vegas to try to actually save the flyweights and to get what he wants next. Great story there from Henry Cejudo. Really appreciate him stopping by. Okay, one of the other big stories on Saturday, of course, the return, the long-awaited, much-anticipated return of one Paige VanZant, 12-gauge. She fought Rachel Ostevich. She submitted Rachel Ostevich, showed a lot of heart, a lot of grit, a lot of determination. As always, she is kind enough to be joining us via the magic of Skype. Let us say hello to one Paige VanZant. Paige, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing great. I'm happy you could join us because last week you were supposed to join us, but then you dropped us for a little show. What is it? Good Morning something? Good Morning America? I never heard of it.
I'm sorry. And that one was last minute too. The UFC, I guess, got the request, so flew out to be on Good Morning America, which I always love, so I wasn't able to join you.
That's the one show that I'll say, okay, fine, you could skip us for, because it's a big platform, mainstream and whatnot, so no hard feelings.
Exactly.
No hard feelings.
Okay, thank you.
I'm very happy for you. Congratulations on the win. Are you happy with your performance after the layoff? Are you happy with what you did on Saturday?
I'm happy I got the finish. I'm really happy about that. And, you know, I know Rachel's a tough competitor. Anybody I fight in the UFC is going to be a high-level competitor. But at the same time, I'm pretty disappointed in my first round. I felt the ring rust. I felt like I went out there and I just panicked and choked. And anything I thought about doing in the back just went out the window. But she had some amazing takedowns, amazing setups for her takedowns, and was able to do a lot of ground control in that first round. But you know, once I got into the second round, I feel like I found my rhythm and was able to turn it up.
Okay, so a couple of things I want to ask about that response. First of all, was she tougher than you thought? I feel like Rachel doesn't get enough credit because maybe her record isn't spectacular, but was she actually tougher than you thought, especially in that first?
She was very tough, you know, and she had very good timing on her takedowns. You know, we kind of figured she would try to take me down. She has a wrestling background, so we knew that she was going to go for it. I thought I had, you know, tested myself with my teammates on that, my takedown defense, but she was able to set them up so well and get those. Austin's on an interview and he's really
Austin's
loud.
Dual interviews between the couple here, the married couple.
Interviews.
Wow.
Sorry about-
Thanks, Austin.
Yeah, right. Anyways, interrupting Ariel Helwani. No, but she was very tough and had amazing ground control and top control. So that's something we're going to work on today with my coaches is getting out from on bottom and using that to capitalize.
No break? You're going back to the gym today?
Yeah, you know, Austin has a fight coming up. So
that's true.
I'm going to go. If I'm going to the gym, I might as well train. So
that is true. And then what about the nerves you mentioned? You said that, you know, you got a little nervous, panicked a little bit. Is that common for you, or is it because of the layoff and the big stage?
Yeah, I was nervous. I think I put a lot more pressure on myself for this fight over any other. Of course, I was excited to perform in New York. And then, of course, being on ESPN is a dream come true. And then on top of that, you know, coming back from such a long layoff and, you know, having my arm broken in my last fight and feel like I didn't put a good performance on in my last fight either. I did put a lot of pressure on myself to perform, and I felt like I had an amazing camp and I just wanted to show that off. So I think if I'm more active this year, which I definitely plan on being, I won't have those, you know, the ring rust type nerves. I know that I just fought. I've been there. I've done that. And I can go into the next one a little bit more confident.
Did your coaches say anything to you going into the second to calm you down?
No, I think it was more I just needed to breathe. It was nice. I was able to look at her in her corner and see how tired she was. And that gave me a lot of confidence because I can know I can carry myself for many, many, many rounds. We spar. I spar at least 5 rounds every sparring day at my gym. I have the cardio to go a long way. So I know the deeper the fight goes, typically the better position I'll be in with my opponent. They did, you know, have to tell me all the things I was doing wrong. Like, this is how she's taking you down. This is how you need to get out of it. I feel like I am maturing as a competitor in a sense that I can really hear my corners and really listen to what they're saying, especially during the round. So that's something I actually am very happy with myself on.
How were you in the locker room? Were you like freaking out? Were you that nervous?
I was, I guess, I don't know. It's hard for me because I've had a new set of corners every single time. And I feel like they don't necessarily always know what I need. And I think after this one, they definitely know what I need now going into fights. I like people to talk to me constantly. There was a lot of dead time and dead space in our locker room where it was just, like, silent. And that's when my nerves can take over. So I need music. I need people telling me, like, hey, this is what she's going to do. This is what you need to do to really talk me through the whole fight and have, like, a play-by-play before I go out.
Was Austin in your corner?
Austin was in my corner, yes.
And so what's that like to have your husband in your corner for the first time?
No, he actually cornered me in my last fight, too.
But I think he wasn't your husband then, so it's different, right?
That's true. He was not my husband then. No, I actually don't think about it at all.
Okay.
I think he's way more nervous than I am. And for me, all I think about is fighting. And there were certain points in the locker room where I could see him, like, struggling. So I had to be like, hey, like, breathe, like, calm down. It's not a big deal. Like, we're just fighting. We do this all the time. So I think we needed, you know, that big win for him to, you know, get a little of those nerves out of the way for next time.
Wait, is it you're the one, you're about to go fight and you're the one calming him down? And he's a fighter?
Yeah. Well, he was tense, yes. But
wow.
I think it's, I've never felt, I understand though, because when I watch him fight, it's that same feelings. It's the, like, I can control what happens in the cage because I'm fighting, but I can't control what's going to happen to him. And it's the same, very same situation. And he knows how much pressure I put on myself for that fight and, like, the tears I shed leading up to it and how much, you know, how desperately I wanted to win. So he wanted it so much for me, especially coming from, you know, a broken arm and that layoff. So I think he just wanted me to win.
A very quick aside. On Saturday, Chael told me a story about going to a local show and essentially there was an empty seat. Austin calls him and says, I can't get into this show. Can you get me in? He knew about the empty seat and I was like, wait a second, I have an idea. Put you guys together. You didn't know each other. And ever since then, you've been inseparable. So basically, Chael is the reason why you guys got married. Is that an actual true story?
That is absolutely true,
wow.
Actually. And yes, Chael was like one of the instigators behind our, you know, I don't know if he was trying to set us up, but he was just like, hey, there's an extra seat. It's sit next to your teammate. And I had knew him, but I didn't, because we were on the mat periodically together. But yeah, we sat next to each other, and then I tricked him into going out to eat with me afterwards. And I was like, oh, I need a ride, and you have a car. So, and it just sparks from then.
Wow, that's amazing. So Chael, the matchmaker, for the record, he told me he had no ulterior motive. He just needed to get him into the door, and you had an empty seat, and there you go. So I wouldn't give him too much credit, but in the end, it worked out very nicely for you guys. So well done to Chael.
Yes, well done.
Regarding the finish, it was very strange, because I don't think the entire arena knew that it, like, did you notice that it was like super quiet in there and everyone was confused? Did you hear what did you hear and what did you feel? She tapped you, but sort of softly. What was it from your perspective that led you to let go of the submission?
Yeah, and I'm really disappointed in myself because I don't know why in the moment I thought the ref pulled me off of her, and we're always told don't stop until the ref pulls you off, but I got the arm bar and she was almost out of it. And then I was able to like adjust my feet and pull her back down into the arm bar. And I just felt her arm pop multiple times. I kind of heard like a wince and scream. So I knew it was over. I felt her tap. So right here, I like hook her leg and pull her back down and instantly knew it was over. And I don't know why I thought the ref pulled me off, but, yeah. Felt her arm. I think it broke. I'm not sure. I hope not. And then, was able to get the win, I guess. So,
Well, her manager told me that they don't think it's broken, that it was just hyperextended. So that's good news. I don't think you should be mad at yourself, though. I feel like that was the classy professional thing to do. I know it could lead to controversy, but it's not like she was, you know, contesting it or protesting it, right? So I feel like you should actually be given props for this, for letting go once you feel that, because that must be a little jarring, right? To hear the popping or to feel the popping?
Yeah, to know, especially to feel her tap, to hear her, like hear the noise she made, to know that I finished it, it's over. I definitely would never want to do any extra damage to her arm. That was unnecessary. We're told as combat athletes, you don't let go until the ref pulls you off. But I mean, in different situations, you know, it could lead to your opponent being more dramatically injured. So I'm happy that wasn't the case this time. For other situations, of course, I feel like each situation is different. So I learned from it, but I was happy I got the win. And even watching the fight afterwards, I was like, ooh, yeah, that was, it does look a little questionable because she goes down from pain. I go down from excitement and crying. You don't really know what's going on.
And that is actually what I wanted to ask you about next, because we've seen you have, you know, these moments afterwards where you are emotional, you let it all out, and it's beautiful to see. But in this particular case, even when they were raising your arm, it seemed like you were crying as well. Was this the most you've ever been, you know, that emotional after a victory? And if so, why?
Yeah, I would say this fight and my UFC debut were equally as emotional. And for me, it was that UFC debut where I never thought I would ever fight for the UFC. It was such a big deal, and it was such a huge moment for me. And then this situation where it did feel like I had such a long road to getting back to here, you know? I had so many different stresses and sacrifices and things along this journey to get to that victory, you know? Leaving Team Alpha Male, coming to a new gym, having a brand new team, having all these other factors go on outside of my life, and then finally to get a fight, break my arm in it, and then be out again for a year for with multiple surgeries. It kind of seemed like the cards were stacked against me, and that was the only time I've ever questioned if I would ever fight again, is because I didn't know if my arm was ever going to heal. Coming back and winning meant that much more.
And just curious, how is the arm after the fight?
Oh, awesome. Yeah, I was able to test it. I didn't hit her, if you can see my cute little scar. I wasn't able to, use my hands as much as I thought I would in that fight. I really thought, you know, my ultimate goal was to keep it standing. But I was able to test it. I got a lot of really hard ground and pound in, and didn't feel a thing. Arm feels amazing. So I feel like it was finally battle tested, and I can start going to the gym and knowing 100% my arm's good to go and just get ready for my next fight.
So you've talked a couple times now about wanting to be more active, make up for lost time. Perfect world, when do you want to return, and do you know against who?
Perfect world would be March, I think. I mean, I would love, you know, we're closing in on the end of January. I have just one, you know, cool thing I'm doing this month, and then straight back to the gym. So I would hope for March. The beginning of March would be great. Anytime, you know, I know there's a lot of ESPN cards coming up, so we'll see what the UFC says, and I'm sure my managers are going to be talking to the UFC about a matchup this week.
What's the cool thing that you're doing at the end of the month?
Oh, let me tell you about it.
Oh, please.
Okay, so I don't know if I'm supposed to yet.
Sure, why not? So,
like, my ultimate goals and dreams in life were to be on Chopped, that, you know, the cooking show.
Yep.
And then my other one was to be on Ridiculousness, so I get to go film an episode of Ridiculousness.
Wow. And not Dancing with the Stars? You did that too.
Dancing with the Stars too. That was really awesome. But as far as, like, you know, these cute little, like, TV shows, I'm very excited. So,
okay.
Going to film that.
Congratulations. And writing a book as well. You're doing a lot of things at a pretty young age. Getting married, of course. So it's good to be Paige VanZant. I just want to ask, I heard Joanne Calderwood say that she was interested in fighting you. She had a win. Are you interested in that fight?
Yeah, I think anybody in the top 15, I definitely want to work my way up the division. I know after this fight, I had quite the group calling me out, which is always, you know, typical. So whoever the UFC says, my managers, my coaches, we're going to get the right matchup, and we're going to get another fight soon.
Yes, it always seems like you're one of those fighters like a Michael Bisping, where it seems like there's always this long queue of people for whatever reason who immediately after you fight, it's just like the line forms immediately, I want Paige VanZant. So, it's good to be wanted. It's good to have a target on your back. Right?
That would definitely.
Yes.
Yeah, I always fight, so I never have to worry if there's an opponent available. That's, you know, the one good thing when I want to fight, I get to.
And last thing, 125, obviously you felt healthier, better cut. We're not considering ever going back down, right?
No. And at one point I was like, you know what, if I got my diet on point, if I really did a lifestyle change, I could make 115 again, but absolutely not. My coaches and my managers, after seeing this weight cut, they were like, yeah, this is the correct division for you. And I truly believe the 125 division is where I belong. So I love it. You know, I'm going to continue to get stronger and get better and really make my name here in this division.
Well, I feel like Saturday's fight was the quintessential Paige VanZant fight, in the sense that I think sometimes you get a bad rap for just being like this, oh, you know, blonde, pretty face. But it showed heart, determination. That's where, you know, I think a lot of people started to respect you after the Rose fight. Even though you lost in that fight, you don't back down. You keep going. You break your arm in a fight. You keep going. You lose the first round like you did on Saturday. You keep going. You get the finish. So to me, that was, I think, it like encompassed the kind of fighter that you are. So congratulations. Enjoy it. Be proud of it. Welcome back. Looking forward to the next one. Looking forward to a big year out of you, Paige. Thanks for doing this and not canceling at the last minute on us for a bigger show.
Yep, sorry. But
no problem.
You got me on.
I'm the kind of guy who keeps bringing these things up just to make it more and more awkward. So it's all good. Okay. Thank you, Paige. I appreciate it very much.
Thank you.
All right, there she is, Paige Van Zandt. Big win on Saturday over Rachel Ostovich. She is back. She is a player at 125, and there are a lot of other fighters gunning for her. Okay, one of the other big stories on Saturday. Well, there were a ton of big stories on Saturday, but my friends, if you are ever at a dinner party, if you are ever at a dinner party and in 10, 15 years, because you can't do it like next week, that's too soon. But in 10, 15 years, someone's talking to you about mixed martial arts. Someone's sitting down with you and saying, oh, mixed martial arts, the history of mixed martial arts. And someone says to you, wow, you know, UFC has been on MMA for the last 15 years. But what was the very first fight on ESPN? Did I say UFC has been on MMA? No, I said UFC has been on ESPN for 15 years. And what was the very first fight? And then you could say to them, I know the answer to that question. The very first fight, UFC fight on ESPN history. This is going to be on Trivial Pursuit. This is going to be like on every single, like the HQ show, you know, that thing, that the Instagram thing that people do. The very first fight ever on ESPN, not ESPN Plus, not ESPN 2, not ESPN News, ESPN, the very first fight, Mario Bautista against our next guest, Corey Sanhagen. There he is. That is the man who not only was a part of the very first fight on ESPN, but won the very first fight on ESPN. The one and only Corey Sanhagen made history on Saturday, so we had to have him on the program. Corey, thanks for doing this. Congratulations on the win.
Heck yeah, Ariel. Thanks for having me on, man.
I appreciate it very much. So this was very exciting stuff because not only did you kick it off, you're the man. So one day they'll say, oh, Cain versus JDS kicked off the Fox era. Corey Sanhagen and Mario Bautista kicked off the ESPN era. And when you're a champion one day, people will be like, wow, that's kind of crazy that he debuted, you know, the ESPN era. Did any of this come into play mentally for you? Like, did you understand how big of a deal this was? Or are you so focused on the fight itself that it just kind of feels like another day at the office?
It kind of just felt like another day at the office, to be honest. I think fighting is a little bit different than most sports because, I mean, you're going in and, like, you can really get hurt in there, you know? Like, we're fighting each other. Like, we're participating in combat. Like, we're trying to kind of kill each other in there. So I wasn't too concerned with who was watching. I was more concerned with not letting Mario beat me up in front of a lot of people, so...
Fair enough. I can understand. People like me make a big deal out of these things, but I can understand why you'd be focused on it. And by the way, I just feel like, okay, I was actually standing next to some executives and it was a big deal for all of them, you know, the debut. And I was thinking like, man, we just don't want like a, you know, a dull affair here, right? And that round, it was not a very long fight, but it was just so much fun. Like to me, it just kind of showed everything that we love about MMA, and in particular, the stuff that you were doing on the ground, the inverted triangle and all that. Did you think that you had him initially with that? That what a way that would have been to kick off this whole thing. Yeah. The finish itself was beautiful. The armbar was beautiful, but the early submissions that you were going for were just spectacular. Did you think that you had him? Were you surprised that he got out?
I didn't think that I really had him, to be honest, man. I don't really lock the inverted triangle that much, so finishing it isn't an area that I was too comfortable doing, but I was trying to listen to my coaches. I did see his face turning red and the vein kind of in his head pop out, and honestly, for like a half a second, like in my head, I was like, oh man, if I finish this, I'm the man. Like, I'm getting a bonus 100% for sure. And then his head slid out, and I just stuck with the Kimura. I have a really good Kimura trap game now, so I just stuck with the Kimura like you're seeing right now. And I don't really like taking the arm. I don't really like arm bars. I think that, like, if someone's, like, very, very tough, they'll kind of just, like, let the arm pop. And I don't like the idea of that. So I didn't want to go for the arm lock, but it was there, so I took it, whatever.
And I love that moment that we just showed right over there of you immediately asking him. I believe you were asking him if he was okay. Was that what you were doing?
Yeah, man. I mean, I don't want to hurt anyone. But I understand that that's part of it. But yeah, I always like to ask to make sure that everyone's okay. Afterwards, when I see them too, I make sure that they're all good. I'm not in there to hurt anyone. So yeah, that's what I was doing afterwards. I always congratulate him too. You know, I'm pretty pumped that I got to be a part of his first fight in the UFC. I know how big of a deal that is, and I know how, that's really going to change his life for the next couple of years or however long he's going to do it. So I was really happy to be a part of that for him as well.
And so I respect the fact that you say that going into the fight, you weren't thinking about the magnitude. But how about coming out of the fight? You know, you're coming off, I think it was Duke and Virginia playing in college basketball. So immediately, if anyone's watching that, they're about to see you fight. Yeah. Did you get a lot of people hitting you up saying, I just saw you on TV?
Yeah, always afterwards. I had a little bit more people message me after the Jury fight.
Okay.
I think that was like a much wilder fight. Obviously, this one was a little bit, I would say, tame to watch compared to the Jury fight. But yeah, I definitely still got a ton of messages afterwards, which I really appreciate.
They had to stall because the game was going long. Were you aware of that? And did that screw up your preparation at all?
No, I didn't know what was going on. To be honest, when I was in the back, I've reached kind of this level of performance and clarity in my mind before fights. Where like nothing really bothers me, man. Like I'm going out, I'm doing my thing like always. Like it's just another day at the office, like you said. So nothing really matters to me anymore. When I'm in the back, like honestly, I did not feel good going into the fight. I didn't feel like I had a ton of snap on my punches. I felt a little sluggish. I wasn't able to really wake my body up too much, but that only kind of really affects you in the fight if you let all of that fear and like, oh, why is my body not awake? If you go into the fight worrying about that, you're just adding worry on top of you not feeling very good, which is worse. So I didn't feel great, but I went in and I knew that I was still going to perform the way that I know that I can. So it didn't bother me too much that it ran a little bit late.
You continue your winning ways in the UFC. Of course, you're supposed to fight John Lineker. He pulled out a week or so out. I asked you about this going into the fight, but now afterwards, are you hopeful that they will revisit that fight? Because that feels like a nice little step after these first three fights, how they went, finishes all looking good. A fight against John Lineker would be a pretty, you know, a pretty nice step up. Is that what you want?
Yeah, Lineker would be awesome. I think that I can put on a good performance with Lineker too. There's a few guys in the top 15 where in my head I'm like, I'd win that fight, but I don't know that I'll be able to kind of show the world what I can do fully, which is a huge part of why I step into the cage is because I want to show the world what I can do. I want to show the world what mixed martial arts, in my opinion, should look like. So there's a few guys like top 15, top 10 that like I definitely am confident that I can beat, but that wouldn't make for the best fight, but I think me and Lineker would be a banger, man. Like, I think I can look really good against Lineker. I think that, I have a lot of things playing in my favor with Lineker, but also like Lineker's super dangerous. So I think he'd be able to bring out the best in me as well. Like I like those fights where like, I mean, when I first heard of the Lineker fight, I was like, oh man, like this is different, you know, like top yeah. 10 guy, huge hitter, like, There's always that voice in the back of your head, like, ah, what if he catches you? What if you get knocked out in front of everyone, you know? Like, but I like those fights. I like stepping outside of my comfort zone. Like, I like improving myself as a person and as a martial artist and a combatant. But I would love to fight Lineker. But if it's someone else, as long as it's, like, a good fight, you know? Like, I think me and Alejandro Perez would make a good fight. Me and Rob Font would make for a good fight, so... Whatever the UFC wants to do, let them do. I'm cool with whatever. I just want a good matchup where I can show what I can do.
I feel like you are one of the rising stars, not only in your division, but in the sport, in the UFC right now in particular. And obviously a lot changes as you start to climb the ranks and you get a lot busier and you have to take this whole game a lot more seriously. But I do understand that you have another job. You work with children, right? And it's a very special and important job. Can you tell us more about it?
Yeah, sure. I work at a place called Mount St. Vincent's. It's in Denver. It's a treatment facility for traumatized kids. We have a school section and then we have where the kids actually live, but all of the kids there or most of them have some sort of trauma. So most of it's neglect and abuse and problems in the household, things like that, drugs with their parents, blah, blah, blah. But they're about 6 to 13 years old. Really awesome kids, but I just work as an assistant teacher, usually like 1 or 2 days a week, like not often anymore. I've been there 4 years now. So before when I was kind of, needing money because obviously in MMA before the UFC or whatever big organization you're going to go into, you don't make really any money at all. So I've been doing that for about 4 years. I still work there. I'll probably still go in this week. My coworkers are probably super pumped about, me winning. They showed many videos of all of them watching, but yeah, I'm just an assistant teacher, so I just make it a little bit easier for them to make it through the day, you know, like they're there because they were kind of dealt a really bad card, and I just try to make that those like couple hours in the classroom that I'm there with them just a little bit easier. So yeah, I've been doing that about 4 years. It's a really cool gig, and Mount St. Vincent's is really cool about like helping me out with the training practices and things like that, so I can make all of those too.
Much respect. That is incredible. Yeah, it's an amazing thing that you do. Do you want to continue, even if your schedule gets busier and you're fighting in bigger fights, do you want to remain affiliated with them in some capacity, you know, still, or do you think at some point you're going to have to move on?
Everything I've done in my life, I've only done because I loved and because I believed in it. You know, like, I don't need to be working there right now, you know, like, I know I'm not a rich man by any means, but like me getting the bonus in my last fight and then like, the few wins that I've had in this year round period. I mean, obviously I don't really need to work there anymore. It's a nonprofit also, so it's not like it pays that much anyways, but, I mean, I intend on working there as long as I can. I mean, it's like, it gives me something else other than MMA to do. I also work at High Altitude Martial Arts, Cody Donovan and Christian Allen's gym, and I teach there too. So like my entire life is in the gym or talking about martial arts or competing or just thinking about it all the time and training. So for me to have like another outlet of something that's also positive, is important to me. So I don't really foresee me leaving anytime soon, regardless of what happens. But maybe when you're the champ, you have to do a lot more traveling. I don't know what's going to happen, but I don't foresee myself leaving anytime soon.
So your entire life is that. I also do believe part of that life is no plastic bottles, no paper towels. You're a big environmental guy, right? But why? I knew about the plastic bottles. What's wrong with paper towels?
They're just wasteful, man. We don't need to use them. You know, everything, like we go through all of our days just using stuff that we don't need to use. You know, it's crazy. Like, especially being in New York City, I'm walking around looking at all the big buildings. I'm like, imagine all of the trash that these people are using. Like one paper towel after you use the bathroom. You go to the bathroom 5 times a day. You wipe off your hands. Every person in New York does that. That's a lot of paper towels in one day. You know what I mean? So, last year, my New Year's resolution was no plastic bottles. And then a couple months ago, I was using paper towels. I was like, man, I don't really need to be using all of these paper towels. I just try to like eliminate as much waste as I can, dude, because there's a lot of people on the planet now. And the planet's kind of dying because we're using all of the resources, and it's very overpopulated. So we don't need to be doing all of this. But I'm a little bit radical in a lot of ways. I also try not to eat a lot of meat, except for when I'm in training camp and stuff like that. But it's about balance too. It's not like if I see someone use a plastic bottle or whatever, I'm gonna yell at them and give them a big spiel. I'm not like a hippie, but I try to like not be wasteful in whatever way that I can.
I respect it. Wow. I honestly, you know, I didn't think of it that way. So you just do the air dry or what do you do? Like you don't use?
Yeah, man. I just use my pants.
What's okay, I respect it. Yeah. Wow. Okay.
Take on pretty much before you grab the handle and leave anyways.
That's true. Okay. I also noticed on your Instagram, you know, I like to go into the rabbit hole. You say jobless a lot on Instagram. Is there a particular reason for that? Because I've used that term before, but is that a religious thing or just a joke for you?
Oh, jobless?
Yeah.
Oh, I love Jamaican people, man. Okay. I wouldn't consider myself maybe like a religious person. I think that like that's a pretty loaded word. I think God is a very loaded word. I definitely have my beliefs in certain areas of that, which we don't really need to go into now because it's going to get way weird anyway.
Sure, sure. So, okay, fair enough.
I'll save you guys that one. But no, God bless. I did a mission trip when I was in high school, or maybe I was in college. I forget when it was, but I just remember God bless out there. God bless. I went to Trelawney, Jamaica. Everyone, job bless, job bless. And I just brought it back. I like the word Jah a little bit more than God. It's not as loaded. So, yeah, Jah is just a different word that I use for God, a little bit less loaded word.
See, this is great. You know, at first glance, you're just Corey Sanhagen. You know, by the way, 5'11", 135? At some point, you're going to have to go to 145, right? I mean, you can't keep doing this.
No, dude, 35's not bad for me, man.
Really?
Like, yeah, well, I mean, it sucks, but I mean, it is what it is. You know, it's not terrible. Like, I feel like I look much better at weigh-ins than a lot of other people did.
Yeah.
No, it's really not that hard, man, to be honest. It's really weird. It was tougher when I was walking a lot heavier, but I kind of live like a much healthier lifestyle now.
Okay.
Than it was when I was in college fighting, right? Like, I was just eating sandwiches and burritos all day in college. So, like, losing weight was much harder than now. Everything's a lifestyle for me, though. Like, really, I don't eat a lot of desserts anyways. Like, eating, like, unhealthy for me today was, like, bagels and lox, you know? Like, right. I live a good, like, clean lifestyle, and 35 isn't that bad, and I'm actually really pumped that, like, I'm able to perform really well and still be athletic, because it wasn't always like that for me.
Okay, so then let me ask you this. You keep rising. There was a man named TJ Dillashaw who kind of gave you a shot early on when you were just an amateur, brought you out, trained, perhaps, you know, took you under his wing, so to speak. You keep rising. He's still the champ. Would you fight him?
Yeah, of course, man. TJ's a competitor. I'm a competitor. And the UFC can sell that, too. Like, obviously, that's crossed my mind a few times. People make that joke all the time. Of course I'd fight him. I think he'd, of course, fight me as well, you know? Like,
okay.
we're buddies, but we understand that this is competition, and we competed not under the lights. It'd be really fun to compete under the lights.
Corey, great stuff. You came out there. I know you weren't fighting the opponent that you wanted to fight originally, but you came out there. You did the thing. You kicked off this era in a very big way. A lot of people were really excited about that. It was a fun way to start the whole thing. Congratulations on the victory. Congratulations on remaining undefeated in the UFC. It's been a lot of fun to see you slowly but surely rise up the ranks, and I'm looking forward to seeing what you do next and throughout this year and then some. So thanks for stepping up on short notice to fight that that newcomer Mario Bautista, and thanks for doing this. First time on the program. This is big.
Yeah.
First of many.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Ariel. Job bless, man.
Job bless, my brother. There he is. The great Corey Sanhagen stopping by. And now I'm never going to be using paper towels. I'm so neurotic about these things. Now he really made me feel bad because, quite frankly, I do use paper towels, I feel like, a lot. I'm a little weird like that. So now I feel bad about that whole thing, and now I won't. I won't. Plastic is it's tough with the, you know, plastic bottles. It's very easy. Paper towel, maybe I'll work on that one first. Okay, great stuff from Corey Sanhagen. Appreciate that very much. We'll be talking to some other fighters that competed on Saturday in Brooklyn momentarily. But first, let's take a time out and say hello to our next guest. Mid last week, I reported that Anthony Pettis will in fact be moving up to 170 pounds, and he will be fighting Stephen Wonderboy Thompson March 23rd in the main event of the UFC's return to Nashville, Tennessee, UFC Fight Night Nashville, to be exact. This is interesting stuff. Want to hear from one Anthony Pettis about how this all went down and why he's moving up to 170. Let's say hello to Showtime, who's standing by. Anthony, how are you?
Hey, what's up? How are you doing?
I'm doing great. Okay, so that's the big question. Why are you moving up to 170?
For the fight, man. Honestly, for the Wonderboy fight. It wasn't like something that crossed my mind. Like, I want to be at 170, and like, I want to go for a title run at 170. My manager, Abe, was like, hey, you know, there's an opportunity to fight Wonderboy. Like, if you're interested in moving 170, I've hinted at it a couple times, like just taking a fight up there to see how I feel. But that fight specifically is something that I want. You know, I want to fight a guy that, you know, when I seen him fight, I mean, first of all, the guy's a great talent. I love the way he fights. I love the way he just kept the traditional martial arts and made it successful in the cage. And I come from a traditional background, so I just feel like it's a fun fight for me. It's an interesting matchup, and it's a huge test.
Okay, so like right now, here we are, around 2 months away from the fight. How much do you weigh?
I weigh 190 right now.
Oh, wow. And is that typical for you in between fights?
Well, actually, after the hand injury, man, I couldn't do a lot of sparring. I couldn't do a lot of training. I had to like, put the hand heel. So it's like, either I come back and I can, you know, start trying to cut down to 55 again, or, you know, this fight popped up at an interesting time. You know, it was the opportunity presented itself. I love the matchup. Obviously, Duke loves the matchup. You know, Duke coached against him twice now, so he's definitely had enough time to study him. He knows my strengths, and, I mean, he feels confident. I always feel confident, so that's why we took this fight.
So it's interesting.
Well, that's why we made the fight happen.
Right. You mentioned Duke. Duke did an interview recently. I believe it was with MMA Junkie, and he said that he feels like he's almost been preparing you for this kind of opponent for quite some time. Do you feel the same way? Like, do you feel like this is the kind of style that you've been preparing for? And if so, why do you feel so comfortable against this kind of style?
Well, this is the style I grew up doing. I have way more time on the mat doing traditional Taekwondo point sparring than I do mixed martial arts. You know, even though, like, later in my life, I started doing jiu-jitsu and, you know, the wrestling and the kickboxing, but Taekwondo is where I come from. I mean, I've been doing it since 5 years old, so it's kind of like a test for me. You know, it's my traditional skills versus his traditional skills in the octagon. It's superior.
And is this someone that you've actually sat down and watched and said, like, oh, you know, one day, you know, in the midst of being at 155, even 145, probably not on your radar, but did you ever think this would be a fun guy to fight?
Man, so my first couple fights in my career were at 170. You know, I could find guys at 55, so I fought at 170 before, and I know how it feels to fight at that weight class and the weight cut, you know, so I just feel like right now is the time for me, you know, to try, see how I feel at 170 pounds. See, without that weight cut, without having to, you know, get down to 155 pounds and then perform the next night, let's see how I can perform and who better against than, you know, top five in the world. I don't want to fight nobody in the top 15, top 20. You know, I wanted to come up there and have a fun, tough first fight and see how I feel.
How is your hand feeling?
Man, the hand is good, actually. So I had a hairline fracture. You know, the doctor in Vegas, you know, advised me if I get surgery, it would be a long time out, or we can treat it with a cortisone shot. We went the cortisone shot route. There's no pain, then, you know, you should be okay to compete and start training. And we did that like about a month ago. And but we did the test on it a month ago. So I've been punching for about, you know, 3-4 weeks now, and it feels fine.
Okay, and no surgery?
No surgery.
Okay, wow. Did you think initially that you need surgery?
Well, I keep breaking the same hand in the same spot and the same punch. Like, on my first fight, that the second overhand right, when I went, you know, to the top of the head, all that pressure on that one knuckle, and I keep getting that same little hairline fracture. So it's a technical error that I got fixed, and, you know, me and Duke are just cleaning it up, making sure that right's, you know, a laser right, not overhand.
So you actually think it's a technical error that keeps doing it, not like the wear and tear on that particular knuckle?
Well, obviously there is wear and tear, but I mean, when a bone breaks and it heals, it comes back, you know, stronger. But, you know, for me, it's just when I'm throwing my overhand right, all the pressure's going on that one knuckle, and, you know, hands ain't made to hit hard objects like that, and my knuckle's giving.
Okay. I haven't talked to you since the Ferguson fight. Have you watched it?
I have. I mean, that was a fun fight. You know, it's frustrating because I felt so good in there, man. I felt free again. I felt loose. I felt like just fearless again. You know, obviously Ferguson's a tough guy, man. He that pressure he brings. I needed my right hand, and I think Duke made the right call. And after watching it, Duke made the right call. Without that right hand going into another third round with him, I would have took a lot more damage. The only thing keeping him off of me was that right hand.
Yeah. So you're talking about the fact that Duke actually called off the fight right in between the second and third round. How did that go? Because that's a very rare thing in our sport. We don't, you know, it's controversial. We've seen it with Raquel Pennington. The corner is actually convincing her to remain. She's trying to get out of the fight. How did that discussion go between you two?
Well, it really wasn't a discussion. I think me and Duke just have an understanding. You know, he knows my body and who I am. I mean, he's been with me my whole career. The hands started happening in the Max Holloway fight. You know, the Max Holloway fights when I went southpaw, same punch, like same kind of style of a punch, and I hit with that one knuckle. I broke in the Holloway fight. It broke in the Holloway fight. And then after the Holloway fight, it just kept, like, re-injuring itself. Jim Miller fight, I broke it again. A hairline fracture, and then this last fight. So, I mean, you know, we've been there before. We've fought with broken hands. Tony's not the guy to fight with a broken hand. I mean, more elbows, more cuts, more stitches. Like, it's kind of a... I probably could have went out there and started trying to elbow and kick more, but I mean, who knows what could happen? I think, you know, at this point in my career, with where Duke is at, I think he knows what's best for me.
Okay, so if he didn't stop the fight, do you think you actually would have gone out there, or would you have told him you're done?
No, most def. I mean, if Duke tells me to fight, I'm fighting. Like, I trust my coach that much. I trust my team that much. I mean, Duke's seen me with a dislocated shoulder, and we fought before, but. No, I at the same time, I have to trust his advice. You know, he's my coach for a reason. So, you know, there was no, like, I didn't disagree with him. I mean, he made the call. He was watching from the outside. He knows what I'm capable of. He knows my skill set. He knows how hard I trained, and he made the call, and that's, I got to respect it.
Why do you think more coaches don't do that? Why do you think it's such a uncommon thing in our sport? For, you know, it's so common in boxing,
because
but in MMA.
It's the difference between making your show money or your show and win money. And these guys are, they're showing win money. It isn't that much money. So it's like, hey, do you want to be able to have another training camp and still be able to pay all your bills? Or, like, you know, that's the kind of decision that these guys are making. They're like, you know, I'm just going to go out there and get my win money. So I think, and maybe they're just not that comfortable with their coaches yet. Like, I've literally been with Duke since my first fight in the any kind of octagon, any kind of mixed martial arts. So maybe that's another issue.
I'm so happy that you said that, Anthony, because I've been banging this drum for the last couple of years, and people have said, oh, you just care about the money, you're just talking about the money. No, I feel like the pay structure in this sport, unlike in boxing, leads to the corners to have to make this decision based on finances or not, and say, look, I don't want to rob this fighter of half of his money, so let him go out there, see what happens, throw a Hail Mary, maybe he wins, so that I don't get blamed. But that's an impossible spot to be in if you're a coach, right? It's almost unfair to put the coach in that position because of the pay structure. If we had just one purse, you show you get paid what you're owed, then I think we'll see more of those stoppages, correct?
Correct. I think you're going to take care of your body because you know that you have another opportunity. And this isn't like, you know, like boxing, where boxing is just, you know, straight punching. And you can be tough and out-tough your being smart of, like, stopping the fight. You know, if you get dropped, you got 10 seconds to back up and just get your wits about you. And in mixed martial arts, you know, the ref has that decision. So I think a lot of coaches are like, well, let the ref stop it and you know, let's see what happens. Because, you know, if you get hit a bad hit, you're not defending yourself. The ref stops.
That's right, and then you don't get blamed. Up until that point, what did you make of the fight and your performance in the fight?
Man, I had a great time, bro. Like, I had fun again in there. I threw some crazy stuff. He threw, you know, some crazy stuff off the cage, elbow punch, whatever he threw. He landed some big shots. I landed some big shots. I dropped him. I hurt him. It was a fun fight, man. I mean, I think we won fight of the year, so I think, you know, the fans loved it too. Obviously, I hate the fact that I came up short. I definitely would have been, winning that fight would have been so much more, but it just reminded me of how I should feel in there. You know, take that pressure off, go in there, perform, and try to finish these guys. Like, go out there and try to finish these guys.
Yeah, you told me before the fight that you were just, you know, that you had a mental block. The mental block is over. You're just having fun. You're fearless out there. Did you feel like you fought that way? And has that now carried over into the, even though you didn't win and it didn't prove to be, you know, a victorious night for you, do you still feel that same way heading into this challenge?
You know, I feel even more better. Like, after that fight and after seeing it again, and remembering how it felt to be, you know, that kind of, putting on that kind of show. I mean, obviously, I took some damage, but, I just, like, my training feels better now. You know, I feel more confident in my training. I feel more confident in my ability to just fight anywhere, man. On the ground, standing. Like, the guy I'm fighting, you know, he has a great stand-up, great range. But I feel like we break down the skills, like, jiu-jitsu. I beat him in jiu-jitsu. Straight kickboxing. I think I'm better than him straight kickboxing. Traditional martial arts, that's going to be the factor. Who puts him in the better?
I remember when BJ Penn went up to 170, and it didn't seem like he took the training seriously because he didn't have to cut all that much more weight. How do you balance not having to cut the weight and push yourself but still be in the best shape possible even though you get to now fight with 15 more pounds?
Yeah, well, with at 55, man, a lot of my training was hindered because I had to do so much cardio. Like, you know, to get down to 155 pounds, a lot of my training was running. So now I'm, like, actually, instead of running so much, I get to roll more, I get to kickbox more, I get to spar more. So I feel excellent. I still have a long time, so I feel great going
through this
fight. In this camp, actually.
Right. And when does that start? Has it started yet?
We started already, yeah. We started pre-camp and put the size on and make sure I feel good at this size. Like, so I want to be sparring at a little heavier weight, you know, so I want to make sure I'm still fast. You know, I got to have the speed and I got to have the ability to get in and out on this guy. So that's what we're focusing on.
And so in your mind, is this just a pit stop or is there a chance you look and feel good and now your new home is 170? What are you thinking early on?
It's definitely not my new home. You know, I got some teammates that are here at 170. Ben Askren, for example. I know what the top of that division brings, and I'm realistic about it. If a guy like Ben Askren, that's stupid for me. But a guy like, you know, Wonderboy, I feel like he's not going to wrestle me. Maybe he will, but I just feel like he's not good enough to be on top of me. Like, I might just too good for that. So that leaves us with a striking match. So I feel like that's what I wanted. I want to have a great striking match with a guy who's going to bring it.
Before I let you go, Anthony, what do you make of the state of your brother's career? Because it seems like the 125s are kind of, you know, in limbo right now, and he had to move up to maybe remain in the UFC. Maybe that's not the best weight class. Maybe 125 was better for him. He does have a win over Joseph Benavidez. Is it frustrating to see him kind of, I don't know, struggling to find a home here when it did seem like he had a home at 125 and was doing pretty well these days?
Yeah, man, we just had this conversation, actually. After this weekend, I mean, who knows what happens with that division. And he's top five in the world at the division, so I think it makes sense for him if that division's done, obviously we're going to go back and, try to get the other side. But we're just like everybody else. We got to wait till we hear on social media or on TV of what's going on with the USC. We have no idea whether if it's staying, if it's leaving. We just hear the rumors. So, for us, we're just trying to get prepared for what's next. This is how we feed our families.
Sure. So if they do keep it, and like if Henry did in fact save the division, do you think there's a chance he goes back down to 125?
I mean, I can't speak for him, but I would like him to. I think it makes sense.
Right.
Where he's at in his career, it definitely makes sense. He worked his butt off to get to that spot, and he kind of just had to give it up, not because he lost it, because the USC was like, hey, we're not doing it anymore.
Right. Well, for you next, it's 170, March 23rd, Nashville. What a fun fight. Just sort of like a dream matchup, if you will. A fun fight for the fans. Two guys with great styles going toe-to-toe. It's going to be a lot of fun. I appreciate the time, Anthony. Good luck in training. Good luck in the fight.
Appreciate it, bro. Thanks.
There he is, Anthony Showtime Pettis. So he has fought at 145 in the UFC. Of course, he has fought at 155 in the UFC. And now he is fighting at 170 pounds. Wow. Who saw this coming? I certainly did, especially not after a fight against Tony Ferguson, but it is going down March 23rd in Nashville, Tennessee. He moves up to 170 to fight a man, as he mentioned, his coach, Duke Rufus, knows a lot about. Trained Tyron Woodley to fight him twice. A very complex puzzle, if you will, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. And now let's talk to Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. It's fun when it's back-to-back like this. Stephen Thompson standing by. Stephen, how are you?
Doing great, my friend. Glad to be on the show with you.
I appreciate it very much. So I was, like, when I first read about this, I was like, what? Wonderboy against Showtime? This doesn't make any sense. First of all, how did you find out that this was actually a potential thing?
I was actually going on vacation. I was going on a snowboarding trip up in Denver, and I literally landed off the plane, and my phone, I took my phone off of airplane mode, and my phone was blowing up, man. And it was like, you know, I was seeing glimpses of things as I was coming out of the airport, getting my luggage, and I was like, wait a second, Anthony Pettis is calling me out? You know, this is the guy that fought, like, you know, at 145. He went up to 155, and that's just three weight classes you're jumping up. And you're not just calling, you know, anybody out. You're calling one of the top five ranking guys in the division. So I'm like, man, it surprised me. It really did. It surprised me. But, you know, at the same time, I got really excited. I've been trying for the past 5-6 months to get a fight. You know, I was trying to push for Lawler. We were throwing RDA out there. I thought I was going to fight Ponzinibbio this past weekend. That didn't happen. Leon Edwards, he said he had some problems. So I'm like, man, you know, nothing's happening, man. Who am I going to fight? And then, then he calls me out. So I was like, hey, I'll take anything, man. And this actually, it's exciting because he's got excellent strike. You know, this is another guy that trains with, Tyron's coach, Coach Rufus, and, you know, I guess they think they got me figured out. So I think that's why he's calling me out.
So it's interesting to hear you break it down that way, because I feel like a lot of fighters in your case, in your position, top five, would say, what's there for me to gain by fighting a guy who's smaller coming up? So already there's the crutch there, who's not even ranked in my weight class, you know, in the fans' eyes, or maybe in the UFC's eyes, it's not, you know, a top four. You know, everyone wants to fight someone who's ranked above them. Did you have to be convinced? Did you have to convince yourself? Did someone else have to convince you to ultimately say yes?
No, to be honest with you, I was just excited just to be offered a fight, you know? It's very hard right now to get somebody in the top five, let alone, somebody below me, which wasn't happening. You know, Ponzinibbio just didn't want to fight. And I know there's other fighters out there, but they had already had fights booked up. But, you know, I was excited just to get something. You know, it's been almost 7 months since I've stepped out in the octagon since Liverpool. I know I had a knee injury then, and that was healed up months ago. And I just want to step out and perform and do what I love to do. And that's fight, no matter who it's with.
How is the knee? Are you 100% now?
Oh yeah, 100%, man. That last knee injury I had against, you know, with those side kicks straight in the knee, I've had four knee surgeries on that knee, you know? And for some reason, this one just took a lot longer to heal. And I don't want to say I'm getting older, but it took a while, man. It took a while for the swelling to get down and just to be 100% before I can actually start training really hard. So But I've been back at it, man, for a while now. We've had guys here at our gym have fights coming up, and you know, the past few months, so I've been in shape, and I'm ready to rock and roll.
And you didn't have surgery on this knee this time, right?
No, it was just a torn MCL.
Wow.
Which is, I thought it was something. I thought it was meniscus because it took such a long time for it to heal. But we had an MRI on it. It was just an MCL, and thank goodness it was just an MCL. I do not want to go under the needle again or the scope again. So I was keeping my fingers crossed, and thank goodness we didn't have to do that.
How frustrating has the last few months been in the sense that you are ready, you're coming back, you felt like you were robbed in Liverpool, and now no one wants to fight you, no one wants to return the favor? That's got to be a little annoying, right?
Yeah, you know, it is definitely frustrating. I figure that I'm in kind of like a pretty bad situation. You know, I'm ranked number four. I fought for the title twice. Nobody really below me wants to fight because, you know, I guess it's just a tough matchup for them. And, you know, to try and make that truck to the title. I don't know. I'm considered the gatekeeper at the moment, but I don't have that mindset, man. I'm going for the title again. I'm not giving up on it. So whoever I have to fight to get there, I know, you know, Anthony Pettis is always a game, man. I was impressed watching his last fight with Tony Ferguson. I was there actually big side watching that. I'm like, dude, this guy is a showman. I mean, this guy's he's got great striking and underestimated jiu-jitsu. He submitted some really high-level guys. So it's not like I'm not going out there with somebody unskilled. You know, just because the guy's smaller than you doesn't mean he can't put you away. I mean, I roll with, you know, Ryan Hall, and he's a small guy. And he schools me on the ground, you know? So it's like, you know, I'm not taking him lightly at all.
Did you consider when you couldn't get someone to fight you, did you consider going up to 185?
You know, there was some talk about me doing that. A lot of people asking me to go up to 185, but I'm not done with that welterweight division. You know, I told myself when I win that title, I'll go up to 185 and see what's there, you know? And if Whitaker still has the title then, you know, maybe do have a rematch then. Because, you know, I think I was his last 170 fight. His last loss, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you know, that's me in a perfect world.
For now, though, you feel obviously most comfortable at 170. And Anthony just told us he was on right before you that he feels like he has been preparing and Duke has been preparing him for this kind of style matchup his entire life because he comes from that Taekwondo background. Do you see what he's saying? Like, do you feel like? You feel like you're fighting a mirror image of yourself if you look at just the way he strikes or the background that he comes from. Do you feel that way, or do you think that he's maybe taking you for granted?
No, I think we do have a similar style. I think, you know, we do have an exciting style too. I mean, he's definitely got some highlight reels behind him, some knockout reels, and I think so. You know, he's been used to this style. I think, to be honest with you, anybody in the 170 division, he's probably the best prepared for this style, for my style, you know, because this is so similar. This is another reason why I'm excited, because I want to see what he brings to the table. I want to know why he thinks he's got me figured out, just because Tyron's a different fighter. He's not the same fighter, you know, and even then, I don't think Tyron beat me, you know, especially you know, that second fight. Yeah, they had changed some things up. I thought it was going to be a little more aggressive, but that was due on my part, not because he had gotten any better. He's still the same fighter. I could see why he thinks he's got me figured out, but he hadn't seen nothing yet.
So do you kind of roll your eyes a little bit when you hear Duke Rufus say that he has the playbook to beat you?
Yeah, I mean, you know, he likes to think that. Yeah, his brother, I mean, he's done some kickboxing, come from a karate background. But you can say that until you step out in the octagon. You know, until you step out there and you feel it, it's a different feeling, man. It really is. I, you know, growing up, I fought guys, you know, at our gym with that style and probably are better at it than I am. They never made it to the top, but better at it than I am. And it is the most frustrating thing I've ever had to deal with. We got a guy now, my buddy Carl Reed, like 205, and he's a 205er that moves like I do. He's definitely going to be one of those guys making the UFC, but, you know, it's very frustrating, especially with a guy that, you know, he's 6'4", he's a lot bigger than me, and I have a hard time with him, you know? So it's different, and he's going to be, he's not going to be prepared, I don't think. He's not going to be prepared.
So Tyron fights, of course, on March 2nd against Kamaru Usman. Given your position, the fact that you have those two fights against him, one draw, one loss, officially, are you hoping and praying that Kamaru wins that fight so that it opens it up for you? That because for now, it seems like as long as he holds the belt, it's going to be tough to get that third crack, right?
Yeah, most definitely. For my career-wise, I would want Kamaru Usman to win. But, man, Tyron is just another animal. He's another animal. His wrestling is very good. I think better than any of the guys that Usman has faced. I believe that Tyron's striking he's very explosive. They're both going to have their hands full. But for my career, yeah, I definitely would want Usman to win.
Yeah, it seems like that the top of that division is a mess. A lot of drama there, right? I mean, not your style. It's just a lot going on over there at the top between him, Usman, Covington.
Yeah, and then you got another high level wrestler in the mix now. I mean, Askren.
Yes, that's
you
right.
You know, the top 10, the top 5 is just screaming with just high level wrestler, which is exciting for me because I gotta stay on my game. I gotta keep evolving, keep getting better at that. You know. So, of course, my forte is striking. Everybody knows that. And these guys know. If I'm going to stand in front of this guy, I better be on par. I'm going to take this guy to the ground. I got to prepare for that. So there's a lot of guys in that division. But like you said, there's a lot of drama. Like, what the heck's going on? Like, what's going on? for the past 6 months, like, I have no idea what's going on. What's next for me? What's next for the welterweight division? You know, is Tyron going to fight? I know he's got a hurt hand. Is Kobe going to fight? Usman? Yeah, I don't know all the drama, but it's crazy.
By the way, speaking of Askren, he's fighting Robbie Lawler next, and I saw the reports that you were scheduled to fight him. What happened with that fight?
I have no idea.
Okay.
And for a second there, I thought it was going to happen. We were talking with UFC. We were even talking to his management. We felt like it was going to be a go. And then literally overnight, we find out he's fighting Askren. I'm like, what?
Wow.
I thought this thing, I knew the fans were behind it. And it was actually, I was in New York City, there for, I think, Chris Weidman's fight when I found out he was actually going to be the one fighting Lawler. I'm like, oh my God, now who am I going to fight, you know, fight next? So, yeah, man, for about a month there, I for sure thought we were going to be duking it out. So it may still happen. You know, if he goes out there and brings out the old, you know, Robbie Lawler, and puts away Askren, we still may be fighting, or Askren beats him. I may be fighting Askren. It's throwing up in the air. I have no idea. Who knows? Who knows who I'll be fighting next? So, but you know, this is a fun division. It's the most stacked division in the UFC. Glad to be a part of it. I wouldn't want to be a part of the weakest division in the UFC, you know? Just be able to say that I've fought the best guys in the freaking world. You know, that does it for me. Like, that's awesome.
And correct me if I'm wrong, you were supposed to fight on the card this past weekend in Brooklyn, right? Wasn't that the original plan?
That was the original plan.
Yeah.
We thought it was going to be, Ponzinibbio. And literally, the fight kept getting closer and closer. It became 3 weeks out, no word. We finally talked to the management. They were like, nope, he's not fighting. He don't want to fight. So, you know, stay tuned. You know, we'll see what happens. We'll see what we can find out. And then, a few days later, Anthony Pettis calls me out. So here we are.
Your style is not one where, and correct me if you feel otherwise, where, you know, size, length plays a factor, but size, I don't know if it plays a factor in your style. But in this particular fight, I feel like you will have a size advantage over him. Are you going to try to utilize that in the fight?
You know what? I would be stupid if I didn't. But when it comes to striking, if this fight become, which I think it will, become a stand-up fight, he may look for a takedown. I'll be prepared for that. But if it does become a stand-up striking match, you know, when I fought kickboxing, I weighed probably 184, 185, but I would jump up to 195, even, you know, close to 200 to fight guys. It didn't matter. You know, I'd still knock them out. So to a striking game, if you're able to close that gap on me, then I don't think size matters. But that's going to be, especially with two high-level strikers, is going to be the game. That's going to be the chess match, is going to be the distance management. Who has the better feints to be able to let those kicks and those hands land? Who's going to be able to move in and out and counter each other, you know? I know he's going to be looking to counter me. I'm going to be looking to counter him. But that's what makes this fight so exciting, I think. He's going to be trying to throw his flashy techniques, and I'm going to be doing the same. He's not going to beat me. He's not going to beat me with the flashiness.
I love it. I'm getting excited. It's 2 months away, and I'm getting excited. And am I correct in reading that you think you'll finish him in the first round? Did you say that?
You know what I said? I said that it could happen. Yes. That could definitely happen in the first round. I feel like I have more power. I think I have the better striking. If it goes the way I want it to go, it could definitely happen. But, you know, I always look for the worst situation possible. When I prepare for a fight, I'm prepared for a five minute round war. And I think everybody knows that. You know, I think I've proven that when I step out there that I'm not giving up. But, you know, if the knockout's there, it's there. You know, I'm going to go for it. But I never look for it. But I think I can land those kicks. I can land those punches to be able to finish him in the first round. That said, you know, I'm prepared for whatever. I'm prepared for a five gruesome war.
By the way, congrats on that deal. What's the name of the company? Is it Van Hoosen? You and TJ
Dillashaw? Yeah.
That's a cool commercial.
Oh, thanks, man. Did you watch it during this past Saturday?
Yes.
They showed it. Me getting thrown through the desk, man. It was, you know what? That was a really cool experience. It took literally Friday, Saturday. It took a whole weekend for a 60-second video.
Wow.
From like 6 a.m. to like 11 o'clock a.m. at night. It was awesome, though. We did our own stunts, but we had our own stunt doubles waiting in the back. You know, we were like, heck no. Me and TJ, like, we're doing this ourselves. It's like a dream come true. You know, you grow up wanting to be in an action video, you know? So my whole... You know, my whole thing was I was more excited to get thrown through a desk than actually being in the commercial. We had one desk to get thrown into. We didn't have we only had one prop, and it had to be perfect. Man, we crushed it. It was awesome.
And Lee, like now, so I know you have a very busy afternoon because the kids get out of school. Like, so, like 3 o'clock or so, what are you doing? I always want to know, what is Stephen Thompson doing? You're actually at school. If I'm a kid growing up in South Carolina, I could just go train with you right now. Is that accurate?
You can. Actually, today, Martin Luther King Day.
Yes.
So they're out of school. So we have karate camp going on. And I just left a trampoline park where we were there for about 2 hours, jumping around, having a good time. I had a buddy of mine come in a little early so I could actually hang out with you. So I was actually on the way back to the karate school. They're probably there right now. They're probably beating me there. So, yeah, man, we're partying. We're having a good time. We got classes happening around 4 o'clock. So, yeah, if you weren't in school, you'd be hanging out with me. You're having a good time.
How lucky are these kids? Unbelievable. And we are very...
I'm lucky.
You are lucky.
They're not lucky. I'm the lucky one, man. You know, I fight for the fun of it. Like, the money's the bonus. I could stop fighting right now and enjoy doing what I do.
Wow.
Teaching classes, just knowing that I have a... You know, these kids look up to me and have a really cool, positive, you know, influence in their life. And to see these kids grow up, man, you know, we got kids who've been taken there since they were three. They're 25 now. It's awesome. I've seen these kids grow up. So the fighting is just the bonus, man, you know.
Does anything ever get you upset? Like, do you ever get annoyed about anything? How are you always so positive and happy?
Not enough sleep.
Okay.
If I don't get my sleep, I got to get at least a good 13 hours of sleep. I'm
Jeez.
Kidding. But I sleep like nobody's business. If I don't get my sleep, I'm not a morning person.
Okay.
But, man, I don't know. I think just doing what I do, and I love doing what I do. So what else could you ask for? Nothing. You know, if I do get frustrated, I take it out of the bag or a sparring partner. And then after that, I'm all smile.
Unbelievable. We need more people like you in this world, Stephen. Always great to catch up with you. What a fun fight. March 23rd, Nashville, Tennessee. Anthony Pettis moving up from 155 to 170 to fight Wonderboy Thompson. That's going to be a great one, a treat for the fans in Nashville. Thanks so much for doing this. Enjoy the rest of your day with the kids, and we'll talk to you soon.
Thank you, my friend. It's definitely a pleasure.
All right, there he is, the one and only Stephen Wonderboy Thompson. So that card is filling up. Stephen Thompson, Anthony Pettis, Curtis Blaydes, Justin Willis, Macy Barber, Randa Marcos on the card against Angela Hill, Macy Barber, J.J. Aldrich, Curtis Blaydes, Justin Willis, as I just said, Alexis Davis against Jennifer Maya. So it is rapidly filling up. That's the March 23rd card. There's a March 30th card in Philly. That's the one where Karate Hottie is fighting Karolina Kowalkiewicz. There's also the March 16th card in London, which last week it was announced Darren Till is going to be headlining that one against one Jorge Masvidal. Also Leon Edwards fighting in the co-main event against one Gunnar Nelson. Speaking of the United Kingdom, let us talk to our next guest. What a big win for her this past Saturday against one Ariane Lipski. In fact, she was the underdog going into that fight. A UFC veteran going into a fight against a UFC debutante, and she was the underdog. You don't put JoJo 2.0 as an underdog. You don't put the pride of Scotland as an underdog. You don't put someone who got their hair did at a Brooklyn barbershop as the underdog. And they ended up being wrong because she won in very dominant fashion, a dominant decision. Now 3-0 since moving up to 125 and knocking on that title shot door. She is the one and only Joanne Calderwood, who joins us right now via the magic of Skype. There she is. Joanne, how are you and where are you?
Hi, I'm in Central Park.
Oh my gosh, you're still in New York.
Yes, I'm here till Wednesday.
And is it not freezing out there?
Yes, it is.
Are you?
It's so cold.
Oh my gosh, and you're doing this outside? I feel horrible.
Yeah, I thought I would do it for, especially for you, because it's pretty cool. Like, and I'm here with my mom and John's mom, so we're kind of exploring at the same time.
But do you regret doing the interview now outside?
Yeah, because when you guys called me, my phone started playing up, and I think it was the cold that was getting to my phone, and it's turned to 10% battery now, so
oh, no.
Looks like I'm going to have to buy a new phone.
Oh my gosh, okay, so we'll make this quick. By the way,
I'm sorry,
I didn't know you were doing this outside, and I feel horrible, I feel so guilty. By the way, Scotland is a part of the UK, am I wrong or right on that one?
Yeah.
Okay, for the second when I said it, I felt like, wait a second, did I just say something wrong? I always get confused about what's in the UK, what's not. Ireland, Northern Ireland. So I just wanted to make sure. Joanne, congratulations on the win. I feel like that was one of your more complete, dominant performances in the UFC. And I feel like I say that every time that you have these wins. But this one, maybe the Letourneau fight, but this one, it felt like, you know, from the get-go, you were dominant, you were aggressive, you put it all together. Do you feel the same?
Yeah, it was... I was so nervous going into that fight. My camp was the best camp I could have had, but at the same time, it was the worst camp I could have had. I broke my toe a few weeks ago, and that was kind of playing on my mind because I couldn't tape it because New York Commission wouldn't let me tape my toe. So I had that in the back of my mind that I was going to have a John Jones moment, look down and my baby toe is like facing the other way. Yeah, apart from that, it was a good, dominant performance, and I'm happy with what I did in there.
Did you consider pulling out of the fight?
Oh, no. Not for a second. Like, no.
Okay, and what happened to your toe? How did you break it?
I was scrambling, and it got caught in the mat.
Oh, no. That's horrible. And so is that why it was the worst camp, or did other things happen as well?
Other things were happening. I got the cold in the cold like three times.
Okay.
It was the worst time of the year. I'm sure everyone else in the card was feeling the same, unless you were like in
right.
Hawaii or something.
Did you just call it the cold or a cold?
I got the cold.
I never heard anyone say the cold. I've heard the flu, but I've never heard the cold before. Is that a Scottish thing?
It must be a Scottish thing.
Yes. Okay. And did it bother you that you were the underdog? Did you feel disrespected?
No. I just believed in myself. And, yeah, I always kind of, throughout the camp, I was having those doubts, you know, like, I'm the underdog. And I was, like, people were commenting and putting on Twitter that I was going to get my... aspects and stuff, but at the end of the day, that's the part of this sport. It's not the part that I like, but it's a lot of negativity, but at the end of the day, it is part of the sport. I believed in myself and I believed in my team, so that's all that matters.
And what about her? Do you feel like she's a little overhyped now that you've been in there with her?
Oh, yeah. As soon as we watched her fight, we knew exactly what she was going to do. And I just hope that now she goes back to the drawing board. And I mean, she's young enough and she has got a lot of potential. So, yeah, I hope that I fought her a lot and she goes on and she can be a star in it. Yes, you want her to be.
Joanne, I have to admit, and by the way, how's the battery doing?
We're on 1%.
1%?
You call back online.
Okay, I feel like this is a race against the clock. Joanne, I was very nervous while watching your fight because I know about the haircut curse on Embedded, and I felt like if you would have lost, everyone would have blamed me because we went to the barbershop together. But now I feel like I deserve a lot of the credit for your victory because I took you to the right place. Did you feel different? Did you feel better with that haircut?
Yeah, it was all on you.
Thank you. Thank you. I just wanted to hear it. Thank you. Thank you. I was waiting for you to actually say it as we're looking at our trip to the barbershop. That was a lot of fun. Did you enjoy it?
I loved it. And thank you for the exposure and everyone. All my fans, I see them tweeting about it and they really enjoyed it. So I appreciate you taking the time and pitching it to ESPN and ESPN actually wanting to do it. So thank you so much for that.
No problem. And the whole barbershop watched you fight the first time they ever watched a UFC fight before. They were all cheering for you. I just wanted you to know that.
That's great. So we got another 3 or 4 fans.
Yes, at least, at the very least. And maybe they told 2 people, and they told 2 people, and they told 2 people, and so on and so forth. That's a Wayne's World joke. I don't know if you ever see Wayne's World. Do they have that in Scotland? No, they don't have that. It's very nerve-wracking because I feel like the thing is going to die any second on me here. Okay. So you got the victory. It was dominant. Were you disappointed that you didn't finish her in the first round? Because it looked like you had a couple opportunities there.
Yeah, I was very disappointed I didn't get the stoppage because that's what the one thing that I was seeing in when I was imagining things. And I went in there for the stoppage, I want stoppage, but I win. So
you told me you needed to get the 3 stoppages to try to leapfrog Jessica Eye. Do you feel like now that you didn't get the stoppage, you're not going to leapfrog her?
No, I just thought that because I would have a better case for that argument, but I mean, I just put it out there and see what happens. You know, I just saw on that Paige was on your show and she's ready to go. We both won in the same show and I'm ready to go as well. So right now I just want to stay active, and if the Jessica Eye thing's not going to happen, then I just want to forget about that and get on to the next fight. I want to stay active.
I saw her take a bit of a shot at your cardio, and then your response was quite funny as well. You said, how about I cardio on your face or something like that? She didn't really take the bait, but what was she saying? Did you have cardio issues in the fight?
I didn't think I did. I was so tired going into that fight. There was a lot of pressure on me, I felt, and I just felt I was tired before the fight. After I've done my weight cut, I was really tired. I don't really know why. I guess just because the camp was a hard one. It was probably more, our camp was harder than the fight. But, I was in there. Everyone gets tired in a fight. I don't know. My cardio was fine. I don't know what she's talking about. I just see excuses.
Right. Was it hard to run because you had a broken toe to lose weight?
No. I taped it off. As long as I taped it off, it was fine. It was good to go.
Okay. Interesting. So it looks like Jessica's going to get the title shot, it seems, or at least that's what she's saying. And I think Dana White alluded to that as well. So if not Jessica, the one you want is Paige VanZant.
Or anyone that's ready to go.
Right. How soon do you want to come back? Are you thinking maybe the London card?
Yeah, we'd be good to go for March.
Okay, that would be good. And by the way, I have to say, your corner just keeps getting cooler and cooler. First, you add Roxanne Modafferi, who's, pound for pound along with you, maybe the nicest people in the game. And now you've got Sarah Kaufman, fellow Canadian, in the mix as well. I feel like you're really developing like an all nice dream team here, like just the nicest people in a corner, like the least intimidating, nicest corner in the history of the sport.
Yeah, Yeah, no egos, and that's the way for training. It's awesome. I go into the gym every day, and I just love it. These girls, like especially Roxanne, every day she's my puzzle every day. And we get in and we get to work, and yeah, we leave our egos outside, and we're there to work, and it's great to have. I've always wanted that in my career. I always wanted someone just like me to train with, and I've pretty got the spot on there.
Now, is this the first time that you have an extended stay in New York City, that you get to go out and be a tourist?
I've been to New York a good couple of times, but this is the first time I've been with my mom, and my mom's got to meet John, and John's mom's here, so it's kind of cool for that. But yeah, I've been here before and done all the tourist things, but I'm happy to do it again with these guys.
Wait a second, this is a big deal. This is the first time that your mom meets John? John, your coach and significant other? Is this the first time?
Yep.
Whoa. So what's...
Well, that's what happens when you move away from home, and
right.
Your mom can't take your boyfriend over to the parents' house.
So what's the assessment? What is she saying? Is she happy? Is she pleased with your choice?
But yeah, we haven't really had that girl-to-girl talk yet.
Uh-oh.
We're all together.
Yes, that's right. You can't really have that private time. But are you feeling like everyone's meshing well? I mean, I know it's a nerve-wracking thing, right?
Yeah, she's spoken to him before and stuff. So it's just like face-to-face, the first time we've met.
Right. And it's the first time that you meet his mom?
No.
Oh.
Yeah, she's in Vegas with us.
But I suspect it's the first time the moms meet each other.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh. There's so much going on here. It's a lot of pressure. I feel like I would be more nervous.
I'm just glad I won, because this would be a pretty shit trip if I lost, right?
Right. But I feel like that's more nerve-wracking than the actual fight itself, just having, you know, having all the family together.
Yeah. Everything's going good. So
good.
Happy.
Is this awkward for you that I'm talking about this? Because I feel like John is holding the phone right now.
Yes.
John, do you have any issues, John, with anything that I'm saying here?
No, it's all good, brother.
And congratulations to you on the victory as well.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
I just like to get it all out there. And by the way, it should be noted, John Wood turning into one of the very best coaches in the game. Whatever he's doing over there at Syndicate MMA, you are really turning into, in my opinion, one of the best coaches, and the team and the atmosphere that you're putting together there. I don't know if you can hear all this at Syndicate is something I think that you should be very proud of. So kudos to you as well.
Thank you very much, sir. That means a lot to me. Appreciate it.
No problem. Oh, yeah, you want me to turn it around? All right, okay, I'm not gonna keep you away, because this is the longest 1%, by the way. Usually 1%.
I'm going to take a picture so that you know that I'm not lying, that it is actually 1%. I'm scared in case I jinx it.
Do you know how much I'm sweating here, Joanne? Because I feel like it's like one of those bombs that's about to like blow up in my face. Caitlin Chukagian has just responded to you on Twitter as we're doing this interview, and she says she wants you. What do you make of that? Do you know Caitlin Chukagian, the blonde fighter?
I'll take it, but Roxanne's already called her out.
Oh.
And Roxanne needs to get in there. She's looking for a fight, and yeah, she needs to get back in there. I've just fought on Saturday, so hopefully, but we would take that as well, but obviously it's up to USC, but Roxanne needs to get back in there.
What a good teammate. I like that. Now, what are we doing in New York? Are we crossing off a lot of the food things, pizza, New York pizza? What are we doing? What do we need to do while you're here with your family in New York?
Yeah, I need to find a dollar pizza, because I had pizza last night, but it was like $4,
okay.
And it was dead easy, and it wasn't very good.
It wasn't good, really? So it was too expensive. It was too bougie.
Yeah.
Okay. John's Pizzeria is a great one. Patsy's Pizzeria. I don't know which one you went to, but those are some of my favorites.
Yeah. And yeah, we're just exploring and trying to not meet Jack Frost.
Yes, Jack Frost. Oh, that's so great. I don't know why that made me crack up so much, but that's just such a funny thing for a grown-up to say, meet Jack Frost. and what about any fried pizza? Any signs of fried pizza around there?
I don't see any Scottish chip shops, but I'll be staying away from that. You know the story on that. I'm trying to be a good girl.
That's right. Be healthy now, right?
Yes.
Right. How are your cheeks feeling at the moment?
They're actually not too bad.
Okay.
It's more my arms. I feel like my bones are hurting with the cold.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll leave it at that then, because I really feel actually bad that I'm making you do this.
No, it's okay. Honestly, like, I just thought we were out and about, and I could easily go into one of the buildings, but I thought it would be pretty cool to make John stand here and hold the phone in the freezing cold.
What a keeper he is to do this. Wow, and not even complain. Or is he going to give you crap afterwards that you made him do this?
Are you?
She's definitely getting crap.
Okay, all right. I saw, by the way, that you got to take a picture with Michael Bisping. I thought that was really cool to have the UK, the UK fighters come together. Have you ever met him before?
Yeah, I've met him a few times kind of at the start of my UFC career, and then I hadn't seen him for a while. So it was cool, and it was cool that he said that great fight and all that. So good compliments from him.
You were one of the very first fights to happen on ESPN, and I know in Scotland ESPN isn't as predominant as it is here in America, but did you get a lot of feedback from people saying, I saw you on TV, ESPN, one of the highest watched prelims in 6 years, Joanne? This was a big deal. Did you get a lot of feedback afterwards?
Yeah, it was really special to be part of that, and I was just grateful to put on a good performance, and everyone seemed to like the fight, so that was the main thing.
And how's the side of the hair looking? Is it growing back, or is the design still there?
The design's still there. I just washed my hair for the first time today.
Wow.
And it's looking good.
Wait, you didn't take a shower after your fight?
I took a shower and stuff, but I kept my hair in. I try and keep my cornrows in for as long as possible, because I love having my hair tied back.
But doesn't your hair smell then from the sweat?
Yeah, like I wash it, but I don't take it out.
Oh, I see. I see. Okay, interesting. All right, well, that's something John has to deal with now.
Smelled like a Brazilian armpit.
Oh, great. That's nice. That's a nice that's a nice visual. Well, I'm very happy for you, Joanne. What a performance. Again, I'm taking a small bit of credit for it just because of the whole haircut thing. Because I don't know if you know this, but I got a lot of crap for it when I put out the video. People said, oh, now she's going to lose because it's the haircut curse. Apparently, this is a thing. I didn't know it was a thing. Did you know it was a thing?
I did not know it was a thing.
But you saw that too? Did you see those?
Yeah, I saw people saying that, and I was like, what are they talking about? We've never went for a haircut together. And then I was like, wait, have we?
No, we haven't. But apparently on Embedded, when they show someone getting a haircut, that person loses.
Oh,
you get it? Yeah. But yeah. We've now debunked that myth, so I'm very happy about that. Most importantly, happy for your victory. Now 3-0 at 125. Enjoy the victory. Enjoy your time in New York. If you need anything there, I'm sort of the unofficial mayor of New York. So if you have any trouble with anything, just give me a call. I'll open some doors for you guys.
Yeah, thank you so much. And thank you for everything you're doing for the sport, Ariel.
Thank you, Joanne. I appreciate that. Congratulations. And the best to John and your family over there, your mom, his mom, everyone coming together. It's a beautiful thing.
Thanks, brother. You're the man, Ariel.
All right. Take care, guys. There she is. The one and only Joanne Calderwood, JoJo 2.0. How do you not love her? She's incredible, and what a big victory for her. By the way, that was the longest 1% of all time. She told me that, 15 minutes ago, and I was sweating. I thought it was going to be like a 3-minute interview, and we made it. We actually made it. Now, I feel like I was a little bit sweaty and up against the clock on that one, but in the end, we made it. Big win for her. So Caitlin Chookagian, Corporate Jake is telling me, Caitlin Chookagian calling out Joanne. But as you heard just there, she's like, you know what? No, my teammate's going to fight her. I want Paige. All of a sudden, women's flyweight's starting to come together. So interesting times there. Congrats to her and the team on the victory. Okay. Obviously, main event Saturday, big story. The fate of the flyweight division, what's going to happen? TJ, the 135-pound champion, coming down to 125. So then what's going to happen to the belt at 125? But also then what happens if Henry wins? He ends up winning. Is he going to go up? What happens to the queue of guys waiting for their shot at the 135 belt? It's a whole big mess of a situation, and it's interesting timing-wise because the next UFC main event happens to be a very important fight at 135 pounds. It happens to be a fight between one Marlon Moraes and one Rafael Sunsau. And this is happening in just 2 weeks in Fortaleza, Brazil. And how about these numbers here that I got from our friends over at Stats and Info? Marlon Moraes is getting a chance to revenge his loss against Sun Tzu on February 2nd in Brazil. You can watch that, by the way, on ESPN+. Moraes is the betting favorite, minus 220, with Sun Tzu coming in at plus 180. And it is a very important fight, in my opinion. Again, a rematch of a fight that was super close. Now the winner, I think, should be next in line for a 135-pound title shot. Let's see what Marlon thinks about this whole situation. I'm curious to get his thoughts. He joins us now via the magic of Skype. Marlon, how are you?
I'm very good, man. Good talk with you.
As always. By the way, how's the newborn doing?
Very good, man. He's doing amazing, and everything's great in my house.
How's the sleeping?
It's good. My wife is taking care of this part.
Okay, good. So you have this fight coming up in less than 2 weeks, February 2nd to be exact, in Fortaleza. When do you leave for Brazil?
We are leaving Saturday, and we're going to get there Sunday, you know, just to get acclimated and everything. It's a little bit hot out there, and we just want to make sure we're all prepared.
How far away did you grow up from Fortaleza?
4 hours plane. I'm from the mountains of Rio de Janeiro. It's a little bit far, but we're gonna have some people go out there and make some noise.
I like it. Now, for those that don't know, like Fortaleza, what kind of a place is it? What is it like over there? Is it the jungle? Is it more city? I'm not very familiar.
It's northeast. It's a good town. You know, it's a beautiful place. A lot of people go there for vacation, and a lot of people, if people from Brazil are listening to the show now and they're gonna be there, they should go. It's an amazing city, and the show is going to be amazing.
Okay, so did you watch the main event on Saturday?
Oh, yeah, I did.
Oh, actually, I believe you were supposed to go, but then the snow situation was a bit messy, so you decided to stay at home.
Yeah, I'm not used to with this, and I was a little scared to drive out there, and I ended up not going, but I watched on TV, and I like it. You know, it was a good fight, but it was a quick fight. And I just feel a little bit embarrassed, you know, from being at 35 and having our champion going down and losing, you know.
Wow, so you actually felt embarrassed that he only lasted 32 seconds. That was the feeling.
Yeah, because I'm a 35er and he's going down representing us and he lost, you know. And I have a lot of friends, 125 pounds. I think the 125 pound division should stick around, and they have a lot of guys, you know. I think Henry, he fought and he was there representing all these guys, you know. And I think I wasn't happy, you know, because I'm happy when I win, and I love to watch those good fighters fighting. But I was kind of cheering for Henry to win.
You were cheering for Henry. I'm surprised. I thought maybe you would cheer for your champion to win, so it strengthens the division.
Yeah, but he's going down, you know. He had plenty challengers, I think, on the 135, and he went down. He went to take what's from somebody else, and he didn't get it.
Does this make things because now you're starting to hear, okay, you know, Henry saying he wants to move up to 135. TJ said he wants to go back down to 135 to get a rematch. Does this make you a little anxious that even if you do win on February 2nd, there's going to be more drama that you won't get your title shot?
Man, I have a tough fight ahead of me. Rafael Sanson's a tough guy. We fought before, and I'm focused on go out there and put the best performance I ever had, you know. This is my main goal. Go out there, perform, be the best guy you guys ever seen. And after that, we'll see what happened, you know. I think me and Rafael, we're both there for the title shot, you know. And let's see after the fight who deserves and who's going to get it.
What do you make of TJ saying again that he wants to do this again at 125?
Man, I think he should focus on his own division, you know, focus on 135. A lot of guys coming, you know, me, Rafael, Jim Rivera, Aimee Sterling, Pedro Munhoz, even Cody, Dominic Cruz. A lot of guys, man. Lineker.
Yeah.
It's many guys, many challenges. I think he can prove himself on this division and not cutting, like, extra 10 pounds, not looking good, you know, like, just be healthy, do what you always been doing. I think he got plenty of tests out here.
Do you feel like as champion, you almost have an obligation? You know, the belt doesn't give you that ticket to go up, down, do whatever you want, that you have to kind of return the favor and defend the title, because ultimately when you were coming up, you were hoping that the champion was going to do the same.
Yeah, if he was going 145, that's okay, but he went down. He went down to 125. You know, didn't go up. So, and before even win, he was saying already about go up. You don't even got the first step, and you're already thinking about the second one, you know. It's hard, you know. This sport is getting hard. Everybody's good. Everybody's getting red. It's a matter of one punch, you know. And when you cut a lot of more weight, put yourself in crazy scenarios, you know, it's risk, big risk, you know.
What did you think of the stoppage, by the way?
I think he that was just the beginning of the end, you know. I think the referee won't just protect him.
Okay, so you had no problem with it?
No, I think Henry was there, you know. He was rocking, and Henry was just going to keep punching him.
Okay, so you're getting an opportunity to fight a Sun Tzu again. I know that when we spoke last time, you were a little bit frustrated because you didn't have your fight yet, and you were trying to figure out, okay, where do I stand? You were campaigning for a title shot. It didn't happen because of TJ going down. In the end, with them giving you a Sun Tzu and that opportunity to avenge that very close fight that you had against them a couple of years ago, were you happy with this? Did you feel like, okay,
yeah,
this
I'm very happy.
Yeah?
I'm very happy, you know, big fight, big opportunity, you know, and I just got to go out there and put on a show, do what I love, and do what I've been doing every day in training, and you guys are going to see a very good fight.
Have you watched that fight, the first fight, and we're looking at some highlights
Yes, we did watch a couple times, you know, and I was in there. The most important thing, I was in. I felt in there, you know. So we're ready, man. We're ready to go out there and take it.
When you watch that fight, do you still feel like you won?
Man, I can say that, you know. I just try to find ways that the judge gave to him, you know. And when I find those ways, I have to give him the victory because he won. But let's go, man. Let's do everything different this time and be victorious.
So since then, you've won three fights in the UFC. You had the split decision win, and then you had two finishes and very impressive finishes afterwards. Do you feel like those are a result of now maybe being a little more comfortable in the octagon? Dana White in the past has talked about the octagon jitters and things like that. Do you chalk your performance against the Sun Tzu to that, to your debut, a lot on the line, different stage, etc.?
Nah, no excuse, man.
No.
Asasan's a tough fighter, you know. He's not an easy guy to beat, and I just went there, and I pushed myself, you know. I just didn't execute the game plan well, and now I'm well prepared. I train harder, and I think we're going to go out there, and we're going to perform, and the result's going to be a victory.
To the best of my knowledge, you have one other rematch on your resume. That was against Josh Hill, right? Do you have another one?
I think that was the only one, yeah.
Is there something different about fighting someone? In that particular case, you beat him twice. But just the experience of being in there with someone a second time, is there something different for you? Does it help you as a competitor? Did you like that? Like, you know, it's kind of deja vu, I would imagine, to a certain degree.
Fight is a fight, you know, all the same. Ring, cage, in the street, always you're going to feel that belly, you know. But it's always good to be in there with somebody you've been before, you know a little bit. But people just get better every day, you know. You can never expect the same fight the next night, you know. We always change, and I feel better now, and I'm ready, man. I'm ready to get this.
People have a hard time with the Sun Tzu. Even TJ has a loss against him. He's a tough guy. He's a grinder. What lessons did you learn from that first fight against him that you hope to maybe do or not do in the second fight?
I gotta fight, you know. I gotta fight more, be me, be faster, and win the fight, you know. It's no secret.
No.
It's just getting there and be better than Rafael.
But when
be
you say
everywhere.
When you say I gotta fight, like, did you feel like maybe you were tentative in the fight? Like, what do you mean? Obviously, it's a fight, but what do you mean by that?
That's no excuse, you know. Like, say I was tentative, I was nervous, and, you know, you just got to perform. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter if you didn't sleep good, if you ate and you feel sick, you're going to have to fight anyway. And it doesn't matter. You know, with us, that's no excuse. You just got to get in there and be the best you are every day, you know.
Is he one of the more frustrating fighters that you fought in the past?
No, not frustrating.
Okay. Because I know people have a hard time figuring him out. He's very tough. He's very durable. I know that you were with him in Fortaleza, right? Didn't you guys do a media tour over there recently?
Yes, we did.
What was that like to be around him?
No problem at all, you know. And he's a fighter. He wants to win. I want to win. I respect him, respect his team, his family. But February 2nd, it's about me, you know. I got to get in there. I got to win the fight.
Any interactions with him?
Yeah. Wait, I got no problem with Rafael, you know. I just want to win the fight, and it doesn't matter.
I noticed that you call him Rafael, but isn't it Rafael in Portuguese?
I've been saying my son's name many times, and I think this is why I said Rafael.
Oh, is Rafael. Is that your son's name, Rafael?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. But you call him Rafael, not Rafael.
Oh, man, I don't know. I think I just call him son.
Because in Portuguese, for those that don't know, the R is, it's more of an H, right?
Yes.
Hoist, Henzo.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. Rio de Janeiro, not Rio de Janeiro, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, these are things that I've learned. Do you feel, Marlon, like you need to have a spectacular finish like the Dotson fight, excuse me, like the Sterling fight, like the Jimmy Rivera fight to really cement your place? Like a win isn't enough here. You have to have a spectacular finish. Do you feel that way?
I just have to be me. I just have to be me and do what I do every day. And then in the fight, everybody gonna see, and I'm gonna win, and I'm gonna get what I want, you know. That's it.
But you know as well as I do, Marlon, that just a victory, you know this game, it's a lot of politics, a lot of entertainment. W's don't count as much, right? You have to do spectacular things to get title shot these days.
Man, we never know, you know.
Yeah.
I gotta win. He's a tough guy. Can promise anything. The only thing I can promise is you guys gonna see me living the best I have, all I have, February 2nd.
Has anyone told you yet what's on the line? Has anyone told you that if you do win this, you will get a title shot?
Things change every day in this business right now, you know. We never know, and we just gotta take the time, you know, go out there, win, and whatever comes after.
And how about you headlining over legend Jose Aldo? That's a huge honor, right? You're at the top.
Yeah, man. Yeah, it's a pleasure. I think it's a lot on the line too, you know. And I don't know if he wants to headline the show, but me and Asunção, it's a pleasure be headlining this card, and the fight's gonna be great, 100%.
I'm looking forward to it, Marlon. Best of luck to you on February 2nd. That's in 2 weeks, and that's on ESPN Plus. Did you watch on ESPN Plus on Saturday? Did you use the app?
Yes, I did. It was good. Yeah, very good.
You liked it? No problems, right?
No problem at all.
You were one of many who signed up. Over 500,000, Marlon, and they'll all be watching you February 2nd for Fortaleza.
Yeah, let's keep signing, guys. Let's bring that number up, and let's watch the show. It's going to be a great show February 2nd.
That's right.
Moraes, Asunção, Aldo, and Moicano. I think four of the best 45.
That's right. Oh, we lost him there. But I think he was trying to sell us the card, and it was Marlon, did we lose? Okay, you're back. You were saying what? Moraes,
yeah,
Asunção, yeah. Moicano, Aldo, four of the best Brazilians out there, right?
Brazilians and fighters in the world, you know, and the 35ers and 45.
I have to say, this card flying under the radar. Damian Maia on the card as well. Charles Oliveira on the card as well. Johnny Walker, who's coming up. Livia Renata Souza on the card. There's a lot to like on this one if you're a Brazilian fan and MMA fan in general. It's all headlined by Marlon Moraes versus Rafael Asunção. Marlon, all the best to you. Good luck. Safe travels. Looking forward to it.
Thank you, Matt. Thank you one more time.
All right, there he is, Marlon Moraes. Big fight for him on February 2nd in Fortaleza, Brazil. Yeah, like I said, a lot of attention has been, you know, as of late on 232, of course, on the debut January 19th in Brooklyn. This is the next one. As far as big MMA is concerned, this weekend we have the finals of the Bellator Heavyweight Grand Prix, Fyodor Emelianenko against Ryan Bader for the heavyweight strap, the debut of Jake Hager. You've got Aaron Pico on the card. AJ Agazarm debuting as well. But as far as UFC is concerned, the following week, February 2nd, is that card. And look at this main card. Asunção Moraes, Aldo Moicano, Damian Maia versus Lyman Good,
Charles Oliveira versus David Taymor, which is a great fight. Johnny Walker against Justin Ledet, and Livia Renata Souza against Sarah Frada. Not bad. Not bad at all. Thiago Alves is on the prelims against Max Griffin, Junior Albini, Ricardo Ramos. So yeah, there's a lot to like there. And to the best of my knowledge, this is actually a short, I think it's a 9 p.m. start for the main card. And you're going to be seeing this a lot, by the way. I know the first one was a 10 p.m. start on ESPN Plus, but trust me when I tell you, I've seen a lot of the start times and end times, and they're not all going to be this late. A lot of them are going to start earlier, end earlier. So the complaints that you had, and I think you saw a little bit of that as far as pacing is concerned on Saturday, when it comes to these ESPN Plus cards, they have listened to our complaints. They have listened, or you know, the power brokers, if you will, have listened to what we have had to say about the cards dragging on. And I think we're going to start to see a lot of changes there. So stay tuned for that. All right, let's go back to Brooklyn and talk about one of the big stories coming out of that card. Dennis Bermudez, veteran of the Ultimate Fighting Championship, with a big win over T. Edwards. And, of course, a local fighter, New Yorker from Long Island, a gritty win. A tough win, a dominant win over T. Edwards in front of his people. And then right after the fight, as he's talking to John Anik, he got on the mic and he had this to say. Take a listen.
Is this your final fight?
Yeah, man, it is. It is, yeah. I mean, it's pretty awesome. They get through here in New York. I've been through some stuff, and I thought about hanging up the gloves after those four losses in a row, and I want my kids to look back at this, and even though I went through adversity, I finished on top.
What a beautiful moment there, and you're seeing Dennis Bermudez take off the gloves. That is customary. You see that in wrestling as well. Take off the shoes, leave them on the mat. This is something that's become tradition in our sport. Take off the gloves, leave them in the center of the cage. So Dennis Bermudez retiring, and now it is an honor to be talking to the menace himself, who is coming off. What a great moment that was Saturday night at Barclays Center. Dennis, how are you?
I'm good, man.
Where are you?
I just finished doing UFC Unfiltered.
Oh, okay. Oh, that's one of my favorite shows, UFC Filtered with Matt Serra.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, congratulations on a great moment Saturday night. Were you expecting that, win or lose, that you were gonna retire regardless of the outcome?
The only way I wasn't going to retire is if I finished him in like the first round. You know.
What do you mean by that?
If I went out of the fight and nothing hurt, I could do another quick turnaround fight, like in a month.
Okay, so once you got into the second round, you said to yourself, all right, whatever happens here, I'm done?
Yeah.
Okay, but isn't that, why does it all hinge on your performance in one round?
There was a second in the fight where T hooked up and he hit me pretty hard, and for a little bit, I was like, man, do I just give this fight to him? Do I just let, like, I don't feel like being anymore. This sucks, you know? And the fact that I had that little discussion with myself is, it's not what I want, you know? And as a younger fighter, I would have never, ever thought of that. You know, that would have never, ever crossed my mind.
How long had you been thinking of this, that this could potentially be your last fight?
I mean, with the losses, with each loss, it like got even more and more real that I would, you know, retire. And after the age of 30, I felt like my body wasn't recovering like it used to. And it hurt to go to the bathroom in the morning because I was so sore from training so hard, you know.
You had those three controversial close fights, split decision losses coming into this fight. After the Rick Glenn one, did you consider, you know what, I'm tired of this. This is annoying, getting my heart broken here. Like, did you consider maybe even that being your last fight?
Yeah. Going into the Rick Glenn fight, I told myself if I lost that I was going to retire. And after the third round, I really thought I won. And I was getting ready for the decision, and I didn't win. And I went back to my corner. I said, that's it, man. I'm done. I'm not doing this anymore. I'm not letting a judge that doesn't know what he's looking at take money out of my kid's mouth.
Okay, so how'd you go from that to then deciding to come back?
I sat around my house for, you know, maybe 2 months playing video games on Twitch and stuff like that, and doing YouTube, and it wasn't fulfilling, you know? It wasn't cutting it for me. I was gaining a little bit of weight, so I started working out just to start feeling better about myself, and I broke up with my girlfriend, and that was like the thing that was like, you're gonna fight again, dude. You gotta fight again. You gotta prove yourself right now.
I'm sorry to hear that.
All good.
It is a part of life, unfortunately. Did you talk to your coaches about it, and did they try to convince you otherwise?
Because the thing is with my last three losses, it wasn't like I got my butt kicked.
Yeah.
You know, I got outdone. You know, I was in it to win it, and it just didn't go in my favor, you know? So with that being said, they're like, hey, man, we know you can get in there and win.
Okay, so they were behind you, but you moved up to 155. Was that part of the deal? Like, hey, maybe I don't have to cut all this weight and just go in there and take a fight and feel a little better?
Yeah, I because when I do all my testing and stuff like that for how strong I am and how fast I am, I weigh about 165, you know, low 60s. So cutting another 20 pounds on top of that, I feel like that definitely hinders my ability to be an animal, you know, and going down to 145 definitely zaps me, I think.
Okay, so you win the fight. You feel good. I'm sure you felt good at 155, right? Not having to cut the extra 10?
Yeah, I felt better, for sure.
Okay, felt better. Who's to say that in 2 months you're not sitting at home and say, I want to do another one? Do you feel like that could be a thing?
It could, but I highly doubt it. I'm looking to get a real job now with, like, benefits and a pension and stuff like that, because at the end of the day, I don't want to be 65, 70 years old and drooling when I'm hanging out with my great-grandkid.
Right. Do you have your eye on a particular industry, a particular world that you want to work in?
I'm kind of pursuing trying to become a lineman, actually.
A lineman?
Yeah.
What is that?
If your power goes out, they come and fix it. Make sure the electric poles are working and everything like that.
Okay. I thought you meant like an NFL lineman, you know, like one of those big guys.
I would love that.
Why that particular line of work?
They're kind of like Power Rangers of electric.
Yes.
You know, your power goes out and you show up to fix it, and you're a god for that, you know, however long it takes.
Yeah, you're a savior. But you have to sometimes work under pretty extreme conditions, right? Usually when the power goes out, bad things are happening outside.
Yeah, that's true. And who better than someone that fights people for a living?
Yeah, I like it. Is this something that you've thought about for a while? Like, why that?
I have a few friends that are linemen, and they enjoy it, you know. They like it. It pays very well. It's a little dangerous.
Yeah.
I like to live on the wild side. So, you know, do it.
Do you have to go to school for something like that?
Yeah, I'm working on becoming an apprentice.
Oh, wow. Okay. So this is something you've been thinking about for a bit.
Well, it's been in the works, and I thought it was going to be like, hey, we'll see you on Monday. But it was more like, hey, we'll see you in 4 months.
Okay.
And I was like, hey, you know what I could do in 4 months?
Right.
A fight camp.
That's right. So get one under your belt, get paid, and then you could go back to that.
Go into the working world with a nice cushion.
Did you tell the UFC this? Did they know, or was it a complete surprise?
No, I didn't tell them.
All right. What do they need to know, right?
Right.
Do you have any fights left on your contract?
I asked my manager that, and he said he had to look into it. I don't think so, because I think I re-upped the contract after the Korean Zombie fight.
Okay. All right. Did Anik know? Did you tell him? Did you give him a heads up? Because it seemed like he was kind of setting you up for that.
I had hinted in a few interviews that maybe this might be my last one.
Okay. All right. So that's why he had the premonition to ask you about it. You obviously were getting emotional. Were you expecting that?
The emotions? No.
Nah.
Yeah. I wanted to have a smile like this and make a joke or something like that. I got choked up, man.
Is that common for you, or were you shocked that you got that?
No.
Really?
I'm actually like pretty unemotional.
Wow. So why do you think you got so emotional?
It got really real.
Yeah, it did. And the crowd loved it.
Yeah.
You also mentioned, I think your uncle, you said, is battling cancer.
Yeah, he's battling cancer. And that was like a big reason I really wanted to win this fight, is to dedicate to him and to prove to him that us Bermuda's boys, when we're counted out or things get hard, that we don't give up and we finish on top.
How is he doing now?
I haven't spoken to him yet, but I want to.
Right.
You know, he's I guess kind of like me in a way, in terms of he thinks positive, and you know, ask him, hey, how you feeling? It's like already like negating that, you know, he's not doing well, you know?
Okay.
So I plan on giving him a call and just, hey, what's up, man? The fight.
Right. Do you think he was watching?
Yeah.
You know he was watching.
I'm pretty positive.
Okay. Wow. It was beautiful what you said, and I think the message that you said was great. And you've always been that kind of gritty fighter. You've always been that guy who doesn't give up. So I thought that it kind of it represented who you are as a fighter. You've had some great moments, some great fights in the octagon. Is there one now that sticks out? Do you think that you have one favorite one that you'll be telling your kids about, your grandkids about?
It will be that Matt Grice fight.
The Matt Grice, that was the one that I thought that you were going to say. That's the one, right?
Yeah, because I was down and out. He almost knocked me clean out, and I figured a way how to come back and win. And I remember after the fight ended, just being completely out of gas, you know, and being like, I left it all in there.
Do you still have a relationship with Matt?
Yeah, he was actually liking all of my stuff and reposting it on Facebook leading up to the fight. And
wow.
I thought that was really cool, man. Yeah. And I remember when I fought Clay Guida, he was in the crowd. And I went up to him and I gave him a hug before I went in the octagon, and like really fired me up.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. He's had a hard time, car accident, but now seems to be doing better and moving on with his life. So I love the bond that you two have created after being in there together. You walk away. Do you have any regrets?
No. And that's a really good feeling.
Yeah.
You know, I did everything the right way, and I always tried my hardest. I mean, if I have one regret, maybe I could let Llamas choke me completely out.
That's the one?
Yeah, I guess. Because I really felt after I tapped that I quit.
So you don't feel, I thought maybe you'd say, I didn't fight for a belt, I didn't win a belt. It's just the fact that you tapped out, that bothers you.
I mean, I wanted a belt, but just, it was never happened, you know? So I can't control that.
But what's the big deal about tapping?
Quitting.
Yeah.
You know, I think to fans and stuff like that, like, when Conor tapped and Holly Holm didn't, they were like, Holly Holm is an animal.
Right. Okay. Is that the only time in your entire career that you tapped?
Nah, I tapped two times.
Okay.
Two other times.
It's not a big deal. I wouldn't.
Well, one, my arm was about to break.
Right. Okay.
And the other one, I didn't know if I was going to get paid for the fight, so I didn't want to take any more damage.
Which one was that?
The Shine fights.
Oh, man. I remember that. Did you end up getting paid?
Yes.
Okay. Wow. So that actually crossed your mind in the midst of the fight as you're in it all. You're thinking, well, I might not get paid, so why actually go through with this?
Yeah.
Dang.
Because they didn't pay the guys from the last fight.
Okay.
And it was actually my first loss, and I thought about retiring right there.
Really?
Yeah.
How long?
Who's the guy that knocked out Koscheck?
Drew Fickett.
Yes, Drew Fickett was my first loss at 155.
Wow. So that was a card that you fought twice. I remember that vividly.
Yes.
You fought twice. You lost to him. You thought about not coming back. Back then, how long ago was that? Was that like 10 years, 8, 9 years ago, right?
Yeah.
Why did you think that? After one loss?
Yeah.
Because you just
I had never lost.
You didn't like the feeling.
Yeah, it was awful.
Who convinced you to stay?
No, buddy. I was just like being a baby.
Oh. Yeah, because that was your eighth pro fight, and you made it all the way to 26.
Yeah, wow.
Not a bad run.
I have 26 fights.
Yes, 17-9. Isn't that nuts? Am I reading it right?
Yeah,
17-9.
Yeah. Oh, you're right.
Is there one guy that you wish you could have fought?
I wanted to fight BJ Penn.
Hmm.
When I was younger and BJ Penn was killing everybody, before I'd go out and fight, I would envision that I was getting ready to fight BJ Penn.
Really? Always?
Because I thought I could beat him, and I thought BJ Penn would assassinate who I was going against. And so I would do.
Do you feel in hindsight, do you wish you would have stayed at 155? Like, were the weight cuts too much?
Yeah, I think so. I was, like I said, I was 7-0 at one point at 155, and the only reason I went down to 45 is because the people that were casting the Ultimate Fighter essentially told me that I was too small to fight 155.
Oh, really?
Yeah, they didn't cast me for the first Ultimate Fighter, I think season 12, and then season 14 came around, and I asked them if I didn't have to do the tryouts, if I could come directly to the finals for the interview, and they said yes. And I knew I could get the UFC quicker if I did that than if I waited until the next 155 Ultimate Fighter.
Okay, wow, that's crazy. So those producers kind of changed the course of your career.
Yeah, and I you know, did very well there, and I was like, if it's not broken, don't fix it.
Right. Are you going to remain in the sport? Like, do you think you'll be around the gym, coach, or do you think that's
it
for you?
Yeah. No, I have to, you know. Otherwise, I'll get fat.
Right. But, I mean, one thing to do it for yourself, but do you think that you'll do some coaching, bring fighters up, help them out? Do you want to do that?
Yeah, that's something that's very big in the wrestling community, is you give back to the generation below you.
Okay. Is there someone at the gym now that you're excited about that we should keep our eye on?
There's this kid, Ashik Ajim, who's a 135er, and sometimes I'll blast this kid, and then in my head he should be dead, and I pull the glove back, and he'll hit me with a three-piece. I'm like, I thought I just killed you. How are you hitting me?
Wow. His name.
And he does all the right things, and he's pretty tough.
So what's his name, Ashik?
Ashik Ajim.
Wow. Where's he from?
Yeah. I think he that's another thing, too. He travels from Queens every day to Long Island.
Just to train with you guys?
Yep.
The fact that this fight was on Long Island in New York, excuse me, in Brooklyn, you're from Long Island, very close by Brooklyn, Long Island's not, you know, for those that don't know, it's not that far of a trip. Did that kind of help the decision? Did, you know, it's just perfect to get, you know, you, for the longest time you couldn't fight in your home state. Now you get to. Did that kind of help you say this is the perfect way to say goodbye?
As I was retiring, I was like, wow, I'm in New York. This is where I should do it. You know,
right.
It makes sense, you know. And I helped with all the process of getting MMA legalized in New York. So it was pretty cool to retire here as well.
What happens to the gloves, by the way? Did anyone grab those? What happens to those when you leave them in the cage?
Yeah, I got them.
You got them back?
Yeah.
Oh, how'd you do that?
I don't know. They were brought back to the locker room.
Okay, so it's all for show, right?
Yeah.
And it was cool to see you in the crowd afterwards. Did a lot of people recognize you? You were kind of hanging out because your manager, Ryan Parsons, also works with Chael, who's on our set.
Yep.
You don't often see the fighters, you know, at 2 hours after their fight, just walking amidst the people. Were you showered with love? Did the Brooklyn people recognize you when you weren't wearing your fight stuff?
Yeah, it was really cool.
Man, that's great.
It was nice. No.
I'm happy for you. So next up for you.
What's that?
So next up, you now start focusing on being a lineman.
Yeah, and my kids. And a good father.
That's right. How many do you have now?
Two boys.
What about trying to get back into the Guinness Book of World Records? Something else on your mind? Last time it was what, the lemon juice?
Yeah, we can do it. I'm game with that.
Okay. All right. Well, we'll look out for that. Who's that screaming
behind?
What's
better than one Guinness Book of World Records?
Two.
Bingo.
Who's back there talking?
Oh, I don't know. I'm in this like office building here.
Oh, okay.
It's cold outside. It's 8 degrees outside.
I know, man. All right. Well, I'll let you be, Dennis. Thanks for doing this. I appreciate it very much.
All right. Thanks for having me, guys.
Congratulations on a great career.
Hey, Ariel, I gotta have you on my podcast.
Anytime, my man.
It's called Menace and the Man.
Okay, I look forward to it. You know how to reach out to me.
All right, we got it.
All right, there he is. Dennis Bermudez. He walks away from the UFC. He walks away from the sport with a 17-9 pro record. He defeats T. Edwards via unanimous decision. Some big wins throughout his career against Honey Jason. Of course, Tatsuya Kawajiri. The big win over Clay Guida was a really impressive one. There was a period there in the UFC where he went on a really impressive winning streak against Pablo Garza, Tommy Hayden, Mack Rice, one of the best fights of that particular year, 2013. Remember, that was UFC 157, the same card as Ronda Rousey versus Liz Carmouche. And, of course, in my opinion, that one kind of stole the show. Unless we forget, has a win over Max Holloway, split decision win over Max Holloway, perhaps the most high-profile victory on his record. A young Max Holloway, but still nonetheless a very impressive win for him, a split decision. Steven Seiler, Jimmy Hettis, Clay Guida. So it all was going really well until he met Ricardo Lamas. And he just talked about that fight. He was submitted via guillotine choke, lost to Jeremy Stevens, got back on track against Jason and Kawajiri. But overall, a very solid career for one Dennis Bermudez. He walks away at just 32 years young and says goodbye on Saturday night after defeating T. Edwards. In a few minutes, in like 5 minutes, we're going to be joined by one TJ Dillashaw, last guest of the day, the perfect way to end the show. And it's been a really fun show. I appreciate everyone who has stopped by. Dillashaw went down to 125. There was all that talk about would he make weight? And if he did make the weight, how would he look? He ended up making the weight. Not only did he make the weight, he was the first guy on Friday morning to step foot on the scale, 9 a.m., he was there early, step foot, looked good, didn't seem to be in the worst shape possible. I mean, like, a lot of people were expecting, a skeleton out there. It was not the case. In fact, you can still see it now if you're curious about the process over on ESPN.com/MMA. There's a great photo essay about his entire process. His coach, Dwayne Ludwig, his manager, Tiki Gawson, told me time and again that this wasn't something that was going to happen on fight week. This was a 12-week thing, that by the time they got to Brooklyn, the weight cut, I should say, was done. They figured it out. They had it all done. Brett Okamoto tweeting out a whole like scientific formula that they had on how to do this the right way, and they did it the right way. And when you consider the dedication, 12-week process, forget about history and all that, just the actual mental dedication that you have to put in place to do something like this when you're that shredded at 135, to go down to 125 and look like that and try to perform at the same level, you understand why he is so frustrated. You understand why he is so upset. 32 seconds, that has to be one of the most unfulfilling feelings of his life. Think about that. If it's a 25-minute fight and it's close and it ends, you know, in controversial fashion until you don't get the nod, you know, that's a hard pill to swallow. But I would argue, and I'm going to ask him this, 32 seconds is even harder because you're so fired up, you've put in so much, and it all ends in the blink of an eye, 32 seconds. That's tough. But, you know, it's a funny thing because Marlon Moraes said this. He said that he was, you know, embarrassed for the division, embarrassed for TJ because he lost that way. I would argue that, in fact, and I've seen some other people say, like, what do you do now with that division, the 135 division, because the 135-pound champion just went down to 125 and lost that quickly? I would actually argue that this was the best thing for the 135-pound division, the fact that the champion went down and lost in controversial fashion and was so quick and it was so flash that you could say, all right, look, I didn't get smoked. I didn't get dominated. I didn't get roughed up. It was a freak thing. No skin off my back. So in a weird way, I almost feel like it was, you know, in a situation, if he had to lose, that was actually the best possible way. And you see the belt right over there. What do we say about this belt? What is wrong with all you people? You guys got all worked up about this belt. I get told all the time that I like the drama too much, that I talk about everything but the fighting, the storylines, the ancillary things. You guys tell me this all the time. And then I saw the belt. I was like, yeah, it's a nice belt. It's not bad. There's some flags there. There's some rubies. Yeah, it's redesigned, but it's essentially the same thing. And I can't believe someone told me that that was my third most liked Instagram post of all time. And I don't know if everyone likes it because they approve of it, but the comments were insane. A lot of fighters weighing in. Luke Rockhold asking if Reebok designed it. A lot of fighters weighing in. A lot of fighters talking about it. Everyone up in arms. My whole Twitter feed on Friday was all about the belt. All you cared about was the belt. Who cares? It's a belt. Okay, fine. You people are so against, they say you people, but it seems like the majority of the fans on Twitter, and I know that's a vocal minority, and I know you shouldn't put too much stock, and everyone wants to complain. They complain about everything. Oh, this doesn't work. That doesn't work. I don't like change. You know, we move over here. This show, that's, you know, Canada's YouTube feed, blah, blah. Everyone's complaining about everything. It's a freaking belt, guys. Come on, get a grip. I could not believe the A, engagement that that picture created, and B, the negativity. And look, as you know, I do not shy away from being negative when it's appropriate. We'll just put it that way. In this particular case, I don't think that there was any reason to be negative. It's a fine belt. Calm down. Chill out. Even Henry, first man to hold it, said it's not bad. Everyone just relax. It's really not that bad. I couldn't believe it. Really couldn't have. It's just a belt. And it's actually not that bad. There's the flags for all the first eight or so champions, wherever they come from. There's Canada there. There's Ireland there. Everyone just chill out. All right. So in a matter of seconds, we're going to be joined by TJ Dillashaw. He is going to be joining us on the phone. We'll talk to him, and then we'll wrap up a very busy weekend. And, of course, the train moves along because Bellator has their big show this weekend in Inglewood, California, Fyodor Emelianenko against Ryan Bader. But first, let us say hello to our last guest of the day, the man who attempted to go down from 135 to 125, the reigning defending bantamweight champion, TJ Dillashaw, who I'm sure isn't in the best of moods on this Monday afternoon / Monday morning, but I do appreciate him stopping by. It means a lot to us. TJ, how are you?
I'm doing all right, man. How are you?
I'm doing good. Thanks for doing this. I heard you laugh there. Is that accurate? Are you still pretty fired up over what happened on Saturday?
Yeah, man. It's definitely unfortunate. It's going to bug me for a little bit, you know, but that's what's going to get me back in the gym. I'm ready to train tomorrow now. It's got that fire lit, you know?
Okay, so I'm assuming, I mean, it's such a short fight. You've watched it, right? You've watched it again?
I haven't got to watch the fight. I've seen some highlights of it on TV. Or not TV, on my phone, sorry.
Okay. You were very adamant that you disagreed with the stoppage. Do you still feel the same way?
Yes.
Why do you think the referee...
Yeah, man, look, go first ahead. And foremost, I need to congratulate Cejudo, man. Yeah, he did great work, and I'm sure he put in as much work into this camp as I did. I don't want to take anything away from that, you know? But the stoppage was controversial, and we need to do it again. And of course, yeah, I want to do it at 125, but I'll do it at whatever weight class. You know what I mean? Like, it's not... I'll fight him at 125 and put a 135-pound belt on the line. I don't even care. I just want that fight back, man.
In the moment, and I know a lot is going on there, did you ever feel out? Did you ever feel like you were truly rocked?
No, man. My equilibrium was gone. You know, a glancing right hand to the back of the head. You know, I went for an overhand right. He ducked it. He shoved me to the ground. I stood up, blocked his kick. And he went to go throw a right hand, and I dipped my head down to duck underneath it, and it glanced me in the back of the head. And those are those shots that just, like, they almost, like, take your balance away, you know, and you're there 100%. I don't even know who that ref is. I remember that ref saying, show me something, Dillashaw, show me something. I said, I'm okay. And we're in a wrestling scramble, and the next thing is he jumps on me as I'm, you know, trying to get into another single leg. And I know Cejudo's on me, but we're in a complete wrestling scramble, and I'm not taking damage. You know, I did get hit, but after watching some replays with the left hook. But other than that, all those other punches he was throwing weren't really doing anything. You know, it was I was awarely defending, trying to scramble. You know, it wasn't like I was laying on my back, getting hammer fisted and getting my brains bashed in. You know, I was in a scramble.
When you say back of the head, are you saying that it was illegal?
No, on okay. your feet. It was, I ducked my head.
Okay, okay.
I went to go roll the punch, and it's one of those ones that you get hit behind the ear or in the back of the head. Those are the ones that kind of like take your legs out from underneath you a little bit. You're 100% there, but just it's almost like you got beer goggles on. Then I have another grown man pushing on me and trying to hit me.
Right.
So it's obviously hard to get back to your feet. You know, I get on a couple single legs, and then as I was hitting the switch at the last minute, that ref jumped on me. So unfortunate.
You know? What is going through your mind when he stops the fight?
Oh, I instantly stood up and questioned him. I was like, "You got to be kidding me! You know, like you got to let me fight, man. I mean, that's what makes me an exciting fighter. You know, I take risks and I go for it. You know, I'm willing to get into a slugfest. I take punches to give punches. Live by the sword, die by the sword, man. But I've earned the right to fight until I can't physically go anymore. And that was taken from me Saturday night, man. It needs to be made right by running it back.
So I mentioned this while we were waiting to connect with you. I can't imagine a more unfulfilling, frustrating feeling. I would imagine a 25-round fight where you're robbed of a victory, a split decision, probably feels better than this because it just lasted 32 seconds. After a 12-week camp, you cut all that weight. This must feel – I mean, would you agree with that? Only you would know.
100%.
Right?
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, 100%, man. I mean, obviously, I've had a couple situations now where, like, the Cruz fight, that one bugged me, you know, because that was a split decision, a loss, and losing my belt, whatever, you know. That was tough. But this is by far way worse, you know. The amount of work that I put into it – you know, me knowing that it just sounds generic and stupid, me knowing that I'm the better fighter, you know, even though we just fought, I'm coming out with a loss. But, yeah, man, it's definitely a lot tougher to swallow because I just didn't get that chance to prove that how good I felt at 125. Like, the weight cut, I felt really, really good. I walked in there to that fight feeling like I better than I felt at 135. I felt really good. So I have no excuses of not going out there and getting victory. You know, I felt physically fine. I felt great.
I was wondering, and again, your answer just there probably refutes this, but sometimes when you see someone cut too much weight, it's harder for them to take a punch. You're not chalking any of this up to the weight cut, right?
Not at all, man. I felt great. I felt awesome. It wasn't, like I said, it was the back of the head. And it, not saying nothing's illegal about it because we're on our feet and I'm moving my head. I didn't move my head enough, and I got a glancing shot. Kind of like when Cain Velasquez and those
JDS.
Box guard.
Yeah.
At JDS, we got hit in the back of the head. Same kind of thing, man. Just, like, takes your legs off underneath you, and you're still there. When I fought John Dodson kind of thing, I got hit behind the ear. And it's you're still there, but it just takes your feet off underneath you, you know. And obviously we're fast guys, and he's jumping on me, but – you got to give me that chance, man. I feel like I've earned that chance, especially being a champion, a champer's champ fight. It's not like this is an amateur fight at a fairgrounds, you know? It isn't like this is some guys just starting out. This is a lot on the line. This fight is very big, a champer's champ fight. Me proving that I can go down to 125s, the amount of work that I put in it just to have that referee snatch some coin out of my pocket. It's pretty crazy.
Did he say anything to you afterwards?
The ref?
Yeah. And so, okay, so at this juncture, you go through that, and I remember you saying, I think it was to Anik on Friday, you were actually surprised. Like, you actually were surprised at how you felt and looked and the whole process. Is that accurate? Can I ask you to expand?
Yes.
What surprised you about it? Did you think it would be a lot more hellacious to get down there?
Yeah, I thought it was going to be a lot tougher. I knew that I'd be able to do it, especially with the likes of Sam Calavita in my corner and him being so smart and telling me that I can do it, you know, and give me that confidence. But, I had such a good camp, too. I didn't have any injuries going into the fight. It almost went, everything almost went too good. You know, the weight cut went well, the camp went well, all my sparring was going great. It was almost too good to be true, man, and it was. You know, it wasn't meant to be. For whatever reason, wasn't meant to be. My mom's always told me things happen for a reason, and for whatever reason, this is pointing me in a direction that I guess I'm going to have to figure out. Because everything was perfect. I felt great. I mean, I was happy in the back. I was having fun. Like, dude, I couldn't get tired in the warm-up. I obviously my cardio was insane for how much work I had to put to get to the weight class, but I feel like I couldn't even get tired warming up in the back. I was ready for that five-rounder.
Anything surprise you about Henry? He told me earlier that part of his game plan was to come at you aggressively, come at you very fast. Were you expecting that out of him? And if so, did anything else surprise you about that very short performance from him?
That actually did kind of surprise me, you know, that he came out, because he doesn't fight that way. And kudos to him, you know. I wish I'd have got to continue that fight, because that would have been great if you'd have done that. Yeah, he came out a little more aggressive, actually a lot more aggressive. He usually, like, has that karate stance where, like, to back up and run away and scared to engage, but he came out guns a-blazing, threw that right kick, and he did land a right hand right at the beginning, too, you know. All I got to really throw was two leg kicks, and I missed an overhand, and got shoved to the ground. I mean, I remember the fight perfectly, which is, cause obviously it was only 30 seconds. I know, overthrew a right hand. He usually backs up, and he didn't, and showed me the ground and blocked his kick on the way up, and then that glancing shot to the back of the head just took the legs out for a second. But yeah, man.
What was it like backstage when you got back to the locker room?
Obviously, I was furious. You know, I mean, let's just be honest. I've never said that I wasn't a sore loser. You know, like I don't take losing very well. You know, that's not a guess about me. I let my emotions get the best of me, but that's why I'm so competitive, and that's why I am who I am. You know, that's why I put that many hours into the gym and train as hard as I do. I mean, even in practice, I get pissed when I lose. You know, and I've been known for that. I let my emotions get the best of me. So, yeah, obviously I was furious. You know, a 30-second fight when I know that I'm the better fighter, it's rough to swallow, you know. And if anybody's been in my situation or just competing in general, you know what that's like. And look, I want to be here congratulating Cejudo first and foremost. I want to make sure that comes across, you know, because that is how I feel. I know he put in a bunch of hard work. I don't want to take away anything from his victory, you know, or his accolades and what he's done. But obviously, yeah, man, I'm not going to swallow this one very well. It's a tough one for me. And I was very curious in the back, especially when I have the UFC doctors telling me that it was an early stoppage. You got Dana White talking about it was an early stoppage. You got, you know, it sucks, man. There's no other way to really put it, you know?
Does it soften the blow a little bit? The fact that you're still a champion, you still have a belt. It's not two belts, but you're still a champion. That has to help a little bit, right?
Not really.
Really?
I mean, like I said, it's not about me having that belt. It's about me being the best, man. I really do feel that I can be the greatest of all time. I just can't put it together. You know, some things I just can't string things along together. I had some big plans and things I wanted to do, and this was a stepping stone for me to get there, and now it's derailed. Now it's going to have to take longer again, you know. Same thing when I lost that split decision loss against Cruz, you know, something that's going to have to take me longer again, you know. Just a little bit unfortunate situation. I mean, yeah, I mean, the belt's the belt. But I'm looking to be the best top-down fighter in the world. I wasn't lying when I said that before the fight. No, that's my goals. I have long-term goals, and that's it. And now it's going to take me longer to get there.
Are you referring to the idea of you moving up to 145? That was the plan that you wanted to go after?
Yeah.
If things went well?
I would love to. I mean, obviously, that's not nowhere near being able to do that now until I can avenge this loss, you know. Or who knows? You know, Yeah, that was something I definitely wanted to do, man. It was getting set up perfectly.
Did you talk to Dana White after the fight?
I talked to him inside the cage, and he wanted to thank me for obviously making the weight, making this historic event happen. And then on the way by, because I got out of the arena pretty quick, I did my press conference, I did my interviews, and I bounced. You know, I didn't really obviously wanted to hang out, but on the way out, I saw him doing an interview. I said, hey, man, we got to run this back. You know, as I was hearing him doing it, we were talking about being an early stoppage. You know, I yelled at him on the way by. He's like, I know, kid. I know. Let's figure this out in the next couple of days.
Okay.
So he understands, you know, and I think he's on the same page. It needs to be ran back. You know, it's too much on the line. This fight's bigger than this. The fight and everything was bigger than this loss. You know, I mean, Henry Cejudo is talking about saving a division. I thought it was a cool storyline, you know. I mean, great for him that he did, too. And all the guys that are backing him and doing that stuff, that's amazing, right? But that storyline is still there, and that message is still there. There's nowhere, I don't know, man. It just needs to be ran back in my mind, you know?
So let's be very clear here, because a lot of people, I think, are listening to what you're saying and want to know what exactly you want to do next. If it was up to you, if Dana White called you and said, what do you want to do? What do you want to do?
Well, obviously, I'll take the fight wherever. I'm open for whatever, because that's the situation I'm in. But if it was up to me, if I got to make the choice,
yeah,
I'd fight him tomorrow at 125. So I'll make the weight tomorrow. I don't even care. I want that fight. I want to prove the work that I put in and the science behind my weight cut and everything that I've done is there. I put in, like I said, a ton of work, and I just want to be able to show it. I want that right to be able to live and die by the sword.
How much did you weigh on Saturday night?
High 40s.
High 40s. Wow, closer to 50?
No, yeah, I guess closer to 50 than 40.
Wow, and when you fight at 135, how much do you weigh?
Same. Oh, I weighed exactly the same.
Whoa, that's incredible. How did you do that?
The scientist Sam Calavita and the way my body was ready to respond. The weight cut, like I told you, was done for 12 weeks. It wasn't something that was done last minute, and my body was ready to absorb. The diet that I was on was ready to, I was glycogen depleted. I was ready to absorb all them carbs, and my body was ready to soak it all up. It's hard to explain it all. I'd have to sit down with Sam Calavita to let you know like exactly how it was going to go down. He knew that I was going to walk into the cage exactly the same as what I fight at 135.
Wow, credit to Sam. That's incredible. And so obviously,
but man, from what I heard, Henry Cejudo was around the same weight. The guy's big. He was looking good too. I mean, he looked great. I mean, he had a great camp. He's got good confidence behind him right now. I'm happy for the guy. You know, good for him. Doesn't mean I don't want to beat him. You know, sure. It doesn't mean I want that fight back. You know, I feel we fight that fight 100 times. I win 99 of them. This is unfortunately that one fight. You know, you can disagree with me, and that's the whole point of running these fights like this, you know?
And just curious to figure out the math and all this, like, obviously you can't fight him tomorrow, 125, but just curious, like, how much do you weigh now, 2 days later?
I'm around the same. I'm still high 40s.
Okay, all right. So it's not like you ballooned up to, like, 160 or something.
No. This fight's got me fired up. I'm ready to go whatever direction needs to be done, so I don't want to take any time off. I want to get after it.
What if Dana says to you, look, you know, we did it, but we kind of have to keep the train moving at 135. We want you to fight the winner of the Moraes to Sensau fight because that seems to be a number one contender fight, even though they haven't said it. Will you be disappointed? Will that not make you excited? You know, you had big plans, Max Holloway, double champ, all this stuff. Does that get you excited?
I'll do what I need to do. You know what I mean? Like I said, this is derailed my mission. It's going to take longer now, unfortunately. I had a lot of things set up, but I'll do whatever it takes. I'm not one that's going to shy away from any challenge, and I'm willing to work. So whatever it's going to take to get me back to where I was at and beyond and get me to where I want to go is what I got to do. I mean, I'm in the position that I got to do what I got to do, you know. I'm a hardworking guy, and I hope everyone understands that. I'm not looking for any handouts. I'll work my way to do whatever I need to do.
And you know, it's interesting because you've talked about, okay, I want to go down to 125 and rectify this. It's something that we heard, you know, the likes of Conor McGregor say, you know, Nate Diaz beat me at 170. I want to fight him at 170 again. DC said the same about John Jones. So I understand your thought process. But Henry's saying, I want to fight you again. I'll give you a chance, but I want it to be at 135. That doesn't do the same thing for you, right? That doesn't give you the same satisfaction. It's not as historic. So Henry at 135 probably doesn't mean as much to you as Henry at 125. Or is it just now trying to beat Henry and it doesn't matter at what weight?
I mean, I'm not going to turn it down. You know what I mean? Like, that's definitely, like I said, I'm open for whatever. I'm open for, obviously, beating him is part of it to prove that I'm obviously the better fighter. But, yeah, if I had the choice, it would be at 25. And, obviously, it makes sense for me, obviously, you know. And then you got the guy over here talking about how he wants to be the good guy and defend the weight class. And now he's got that momentum to where he has done that. You know, he's talking about how he wants to save the 125-pound division, but now he wants to leave it. You know, I feel like you did do that. The numbers on ESPN were fantastic, it looks like, you know, from what I've seen. Looks like we did great. I mean, that's a huge thing for the flyweight division. You know, so I guess there's one argument there that you want to save the division, continue to save it, and bring in these views, you know. I don't know, man. But like I said, I'm not the one that gets to choose because I'm not the one victorious. I'm the guy that's got the loss, so let the boss man figure it out, and I'm going to be training. I'll be ready to go either direction.
I know you said initially you're coming down to kill the flyweights. Would it be fair to say that now that it's over, you don't want to see that happen?
Man, it wasn't. I didn't want to kill the flyweights. That was just so. It's like everyone thinks that I'm making decisions around here. If I was making decisions, I'd be getting paid a whole lot more money, right? You know,
right.
Like I'm just doing what is a rumor. It wasn't even told to me 100%. It wasn't like, if this happens, the flyweights are gone. It was like, that was a rumor. People are getting cut. People are saying, like, oh, we think this might happen. Like, oh, Demetrius Johnson's gone now. They're going to get rid of the division. Like, it was never, ever said 100% that was going to happen. That was just a storyline, and I ran with it. You know what I mean? Like, sure, if that's what they want to do, and if that really was what they wanted to do, whatever, you know? But I didn't want them gone. It wasn't like I was like, yeah, sweet, let's get rid of a bunch of people's jobs, you know? It was more the fact that I wanted to be a double champ. I was going for that pound for pound spot. You know, I had big goals, man, and that's all it really came down to.
Two last things, and again, I really appreciate the time. He said this twice, and I thought your response was perfect. Like, you didn't miss a beat, but I'm wondering if it bothered you at all when he talked about, hey, this guy a couple of years ago was a part of a union, and now he's talking about, you know, going down and killing divisions and things like that. Did you feel like that was a fair thing? Like, do you feel like you're being painted with the wrong brush? Did you feel like that was a little bit too, you know, a little too personal? How did you react to that? Because I thought your response was great on the stage, but deep down, did that bother you?
No, I mean, it didn't bother me, man. You know, that was the direction I was pointed in. That was what I was told was right. You know, like, sometimes you're guided in directions that you don't know where you want to be guided to, you know, until it comes all about, you know. Really, it's just about what's going to be best for me to get my title shot at that time, and I thought that was it, you know?
Okay. And I appreciate you saying, hey, I'm a sore loser. I've never said I wasn't a sore loser.
Yeah, I am, man.
I know, but I feel like you've actually, like, look, when I said that you were going to be on the show, a lot of people are like, oh, TJ's going to whine. I lost respect for him. Like, what do these people expect? I'm not just saying this because you're here. I would say this if you weren't. You just went through a 12-week process that is almost like the closest thing to hell, like to put your body and life through that and your family through that. What do people expect you to do and say? I honestly feel like you've been a little bit treated unfairly here in the aftermath. Like, do people just want you to be like, no big deal, I'm just going to move on? Like, of course you're upset. Of course you want. So I don't know if you've seen any of that, and that's why you said that. But I just want to say to you, I feel like the reaction has been a little unfair. I want people to care. I want people to be upset afterwards, especially when the fight ends like that.
Yeah, I mean, that's kind of my point. I have seen it. I mean, obviously, I understand. I mean, it's a little bit of a broken record. I was pissed when I lost to Cruz as well, too, you know, and I was pissed when I lost to a Sintel, both split decisions. So, I mean, this isn't like the first time you've kind of heard, like, oh, poor me, I lost. But I did. It sucks, man. Excuse my language. I worked my butt off, and I lost a fight that I don't feel like I should have. Obviously, it didn't go my way. And, yeah, I'm going to be disappointed in it. So I'm gonna talk about it. But, yeah, I don't care if it's me and my family playing, with my brothers playing Monopoly. I get pissed. You know what I mean? Like, I'm competitive, and that's why I am where I'm at. My competitive edge and my meanness has definitely gotten me really far, and I'm not going to let go of it now just because you guys are afraid of hearing about it.
Okay, I lied. One last one. What's the game plan now? Do you sit and talk to the UFC? Like, how quickly do you want to return in a perfect world?
Game plan is I have no injuries. Camp was awesome. I fought for 30 seconds.
Right.
Plan is Juan Archuleta is fighting this weekend in L.A. I'll be up there cornering him, so I'm helping him lose his weight. He's dropping down to 135s from 145s. You know, he's one of those guys that does through Sam Calavita. He had four belts at King of the Cage, so I'm going to be helping him out for his fight this weekend. I'm right back in the gym, man. Like I said, I'll fight Cejudo tomorrow at whatever weight class he wants. I'm fired up, and I guess that's going to be a dangerous me. You know, I was already fired up. I was already motivated. My wife's going to be pissed because she wants to go on vacation, but I'm going to be in the gym, you know. So we'll see, man. I mean, I appreciate everyone tuning in and watching. That's so cool to see the numbers of what ESPN did. I'm really unfortunate that I didn't get to put on a bigger, better show, because that's the kind of fighter I want to be. you know, it's a fighter I try to be. Like I said, I live by the sword, I die by the sword. I like to be in those slugfests. I mean, shoot, man, look at me getting dropped by Cody. I was hurt a lot more in that fight than I was this one, and came back and knocked him out. You know, every time I've won my belt, I've defended it against the same exact guy. I beat Burrell, I had to defend it against Burrell. I beat Cody, I had to defend it against Cody. I feel like I'm asking for something reasonable. I just want to get out there and prove that that wasn't right, that it was a controversial decision. Congratulations, Henry Cejudo. You did great. I'm sure you had an awesome camp. And congratulations to your team and your family. Enjoy this process. Enjoy this victory. But I can't wait to dance once again.
Thanks for doing this, TJ. I really appreciate it. Class stuff from you. Thank you for coming on. I'm sure you're not, you know, in the best of moods to talk about it all, but I really appreciate the candor and your thoughts. So congrats on making it to 125 and doing what a lot of people didn't think you'd even be able to do, let alone whatever happened in the fight. That was incredible to watch, and hopefully for your sake you get what you want next.
I really appreciate it, man. And yeah, it's that's the fight game. We have the highest highs and the lowest lows, and you got to learn to deal with them. So this is something I'm going to have to learn to deal with. You know, I already have learned, but something I am going to deal with.
Thank you, TJ. Appreciate it.
Of course. You have a good one.
You too. There he is, TJ Dillashaw, right. Still the reigning defending UFC bantamweight champion, not the flyweight champion, but now it opens up a really interesting scenario for the UFC. One last quick thing before we go. Didn't get to talk about it at length on this particular program. Definitely will as the week goes on. Donald Cerrone with a massive win over Alexander Hernandez, calling out once again Conor McGregor. Conor seems interested. We'll see where they go from there. But that is a fight that is bigger than a title in many respects, in my opinion. That is a fight that I think you can headline a pay-per-view with and do over a million, I think, buys. So, no post-show this week. We do have a new show called The MMA Reporters that comes out every Wednesday evening on iTunes. Audio only for now. We'll talk a whole lot more about Brooklyn, Bellator this weekend, the winners coming out of this weekend, the Fortaleza card coming up. A lot to discuss. It's kind of like my old show, The MMA Beat, so look out for that. That's Wednesday evenings. And then we'll have more about our future programming and future things. I see all the questions. I see everyone asking me things. Don't worry. As I told you from the beginning, I got you. Don't worry. Look at us. And by the way, ESPN News, midnight Eastern, tomorrow night, Tuesday night. So technically Wednesday, if you want to be a stickler, 9 p.m. Pacific, Tuesday night, tomorrow, Tuesday, on ESPN News. We're back on TV. That was a lot of fun last week. Looking forward to seeing the show again. CJ, Corporate Jake. You can hear my music. There it is. The familiar sound. I'm kind of afraid to go outside because I hear it's really cold out there. And it's really toasty in here, I must say. And I appreciate all of you. Kind of the best day to take in the show if you're in the Northeast and you don't want to go outside on this holiday here in the United States. Hope you enjoyed the program. I appreciate everyone who stopped by, who tuned in, and what a fun day it has been. Recapping a really memorable night in Brooklyn. Had so much fun doing everything that we did, not just on Saturday, but all week long here in Bristol, in Brooklyn. All the media stuff that we did, all the shows that I were on, that I was on. I want to thank everyone who had me on their show, to talk about this event and how special it was, not only for the company, but for the sport. This is a big deal. If you're an international viewer and it doesn't quite make sense, trust me, this was a massive, massive deal in the history of the sport. It took us 26 years to get here, but the UFC is finally at the worldwide leader, and I couldn't be more excited to be a part of it. Thank you so much, Henry Cejudo, Paige Van Zandt, Corey Sanhagen, Anthony Pettis, Stephen Wonderboy Thompson, Joanne Calderwood, Marlon Moraes, Dennis Bermudez, and TJ Dillashaw for stopping by. And again, thanks to all of you. If you missed it, check it out. iTunes, Stitcher, YouTube, Twitter, all those places and more. Back next week, same time and place. Until I say peace, I'm out of here.